I am going to call this meeting to order of the City of Tacoma's Landmarks Preservation Commission for the wonderful evening, sunny evening of May 12th, 2021. And we will begin the meeting like we always do by acknowledging that we are holding this meeting on the lands of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. I'm going to start with a roll call. Hopefully I see everyone. Oh, I'm going to have to make my screen bigger. Okay, so I'm just going to read you as you appear from bottom to top. So in our virtual space this evening, we currently have commissioners, Jaggers, Slessor, Williams, Stewart, Cade, Mortensen, Morgan Roth, Hart, Johnson. I believe that's everyone. Yes. Okay. I will move to, we do have a new staff introduction, don't we, Mr. McKnight?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Should we do this first, or should we get the consent agenda first?
It's your discretion.
Oh, I have so much discretion. Let's move the consent agenda first, and then do that. It feels more official to me. So we do have a consent agenda, and I am wondering if there's any objection to moving forward with the consent agenda by unanimous consent this evening. I'm seeing no objections, so the consent agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. And I will excuse our one absence of the evening is Commissioner Sundstrom. I'm just checking, making sure no one snuck in on me, any commissioners. It does not look so. So I will hand it over to you, Mr. McKnight, for our new staff introduction.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So I'm happy to introduce Mary Crabtree. She is going to be supporting the commission and taking over from BT, who is moving on to, I think, is it Environmental Services? I'm not sure. But Mary is going to be doing the support and running the meetings for us. She comes to us from the clerk's office, and we're super happy to have her with us. No, I don't see there.
I see her name on there. So welcome, Mary. And I'd also like to give, oh, there's Mary. Welcome, Mary. This is a very kind commission. I'd like to say it's the best commission in the City of Tacoma, but that's a personal opinion. So, but welcome. And I would like to actually give a strong shout out, and maybe we can do like the council does, or we can actually turn our mics on to do the virtual rounds of applause for all the work BT has done for us over this long time, this long COVID. BT, I think making our transition to a virtual world, as you've made it quite smooth, and appreciate everything that you've done. And we'll be sad to see you leave this commission, but you'll have the knowledge that you have been with the best commission in the City of Tacoma. So we appreciate everything. We'll give you a round of applause, commissioners.
Thank you, everyone.
Great. Okay. With that, we have a first order of business is going to be a public hearing this evening. So what I am going to do is call to order the public hearing. This in the past, hopefully that is still correct. And I will call for a staff report. This is a public hearing on the rescission of the totem pole from the Tacoma Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the totem pole located in Fireman's or Firefighters Park now at 801 A Street. And so background, on March 8th of this year, the Tacoma Arts Commission unanimously moved to remove the Tacoma totem pole from the municipal arts collection based on a recommendation made by the accession panel that was convened on February 25th. And the panel found that the pole met the deaccession criteria as inauthentic, meaning that the word is discovered to be unauthentic, fraudulent, or stolen, and also lacking aesthetic value. And the work has not withstood the test of time. And in addition to this recommendation to remove the pole from the art collection, the panel further recommended that the totem pole be removed from Firefighters Park and or be removed from the Tacoma Register of Historic Places due to its misrepresentation of Native American history and culture. The totem pole was commissioned by Tacoma businesspersons Charles Thorne and William Sheard, and reportedly was carved in 1903 by unknown persons. Although it was claimed to have been carved by Alaskan or British Columbian tribal members, more recent analysis by art historians and members of the tribal representatives cast doubt on this claim. The pole was created as a juxtaposition to the totem pole in Pioneer Square in Seattle, with civic boosterism and economic competition as underlying motives. The pole is currently in its third location. Previously, it was located south of the Tacoma Hotel on A Street and further north of its current location. It was added to the Tacoma Historic Register in 1975. On March 24th, the Landmarks Commission voted to schedule the rescission request, rescission meaning removal from the Historic Register, for a public hearing on May 12th, which is today. And as of May 6th, when the staff report was written, one written comment was received. However, I believe that there have been at least a couple more that have been sent in since that time prior or following our mail date. So I believe Lauren will be putting those up on the screen as well. I can read those into the record, or if the commission can read them on the screen, we can just do it that way, whichever is preferable. In 2013, the totem pole was declared in imminent danger of collapse. At the time, there was discussion about the appropriateness of the pole's location and whether the pole should be stabilized or removed, given its problematic origin and misrepresentation of Native American culture. However, ultimately, a stabilization plan was presented to and approved by the Landmarks Commission at that time. This process that we're in is the rescission process. It's a process for removal of a property or item from the Tacoma Register of Historic Places. There is actually a provision for this in the city code, 13.07.055 is citation. The code provides two provisions for the Landmarks Commission to initiate the process as follows. One, of course, is the historic property no longer exists, which does not apply in this case. And then secondly, that the commission finds that retaining the property on the historic register does not further the goals and objectives of the historic preservation code or the preservation plan. And if the commission finds that the historic status of the property is not consistent with these goals and policies, then the commission schedules a public hearing within 60 days to receive comment. And then following the close of the comment period, the commission may vote to recommend to city council removal of the item from the historic register. So the action requested today is just to receive public comment on the proposed rescission. Following the close of this hearing, the commission may opt to leave the comment period open for an additional 10 days or may close the comment period. Since we have not received very many comments, it may be advisable to leave it open for just a little while longer. And then that way we can bring back all of the comments collected at the next Landmarks meeting. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. And if my fellow commissioners didn't know, I was at the last council meeting where they voted in the change to the park name. So that was a momentous occasion, I think, in recognition of Firefighters Park versus Firemen's Park. That was a very nice ceremony. So with that, Ms. McBride, I hear that you have some comments perhaps, and are there others with you that would like to provide some comments before we begin public comment?
Thank you, Chair. I really don't have much to say except to thank the Landmarks Commission for considering the recommendation from the Arts Commission. And thank you, Chair, for your service on the Deaccession Commission along to represent the Landmarks. And in addition to yourself, there was Jeanette Sanchez from the Tacoma Art Museum, and the remaining Deaccession panel members was centered on Indigenous voice and included Andrew Strobel, who's a Haida tribal member and the Puyallup tribe planning director, Catherine Edwards with the Central Council Tlingit tribe and Haida tribal council member, Clinton McLeod from the Puyallup tribe as well, and really centering Indigenous voice for the first time in this process is really powerful. And I appreciate you moving forward with this action and consideration. And I would just also like to acknowledge that Asia Tail is working with us, is here today, helping us to facilitate, as well as my colleagues, Rebecca Salverson and Chevy Chung. But I look forward to hearing from the public and moving this forward. Thank you.
Amy and Kevin, this is Chevy. Yes. We appreciate this space, and I would like to add that Jeanette Sanchez is a member of the Tacoma Arts Commission, not the Tacoma Art Museum. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I do that? I'm sorry. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And I also should apologize to our great art commission for suggesting that they may not be the best commission in the city of Tacoma. So we usually don't have fellow commissions at our commission meeting, but I still stand by my remarks. Yes, Ms. McGrath.
Okay, so Jeanette Sanchez is on this call as well. Jeanette, did you want to, she was also on the deaccession panel, and I don't know if you would like to say something in this or if it's part of the public comment. I'm not sure how it works.
I think if you brought folks along with you, that it'd be fine for them to go ahead as being part of that process to provide a comment, and then I'll open it up for public comment.
And I can't see Jeanette on here, so I'm feeling, Jeanette, did you want to say something at this point? At all? She might not.
Sure.
There we go.
Okay, yes. What an honor to be sitting on the other best commission in the city of Tacoma. I had the privilege of sitting with our first panel and talking about the authenticity of this piece of art. And while we can acknowledge that it is a piece of art, what we determined after lengthy discussion was that it is completely inauthentic, and it's inauthentic to the extent that there are no living Indigenous Native American peoples who would claim it if we removed it. The difference between this pole and the totem pole in Seattle was that was a stolen piece of work from Alaska. And when they were given the chance to return it, there were people to return it to who wanted it back. And this one, there is no one staking that claim. And so it's like a souvenir from a time when people who looked like me and the other people on the panel were not treated as fully human with full rights. And so it is a painful reminder of that history. And it's not that we should forget that those times happened, but we don't need this to remember it. And I would encourage us to take it down and commission a piece of work that honors the people who are still living with us today. And so I'm happy to provide any more context if people want it. But yeah, I just wanted to share that. It was a really emotional meeting. I don't think there were times when, I don't know, I think we all teared up or cried in that meeting. And so it was a very emotional experience to go through and to absorb and then to take back to our Arts Commission.
Thank you. Rebecca, Asia, or Chevy, is there anything? Seeing none, I'm gonna I saw Chevy. Yes,
I'm good, thank you, Kevin.
Okay. Okay, so with that, I am going to, and this is always a bit of my Zoom challenge, I'm going to go over to our attendees list here and ask those who are attending the meeting and would like to give public comment to raise their hands. Is that, let's see. Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay. So let's see. We'll make this work. So raise your hands now and keep them up, and I will call on you in the order in which you appear to have raised your hands to me, according to Zoom. So we have Ms. Jennifer Keating.
Hoxlahail. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes.
All right. Awesome. Hoxlahail. Good day. My name is Jennifer Keating. I'm an enrolled member of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. I'm a land use planner. And most relevant to this conversation, I'm an assistant tribal historic preservation officer for the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. First off, I would like to thank the Arts Commission for your work and acknowledging that this is not a good representation, an accurate representation, or even a real representation of local Native American art. So I thank you for your work. In Native culture, we're taught not to speak on issues we have not personally lived. Therefore, I do not hold traditional teachings of carving, so I should not speak on them. So I will not speak on the false totem as an artist because I'm not an artist. And I will not speak on the misrepresentation of family culture and spiritual meanings of a totem because I am not an Alaskan heritage. I thank the Puyallup artists and our Alaskan relatives who have taken the time to be here tonight in support of the removal of this totem. As an assistant tribal historic preservation officer, it's my job to help teach, protect, and promote accurate and local tribal history. Therefore, it is my job to see the removal of this structure. It is the epitome of cultural appropriation and further supports misrepresentation of local tribal history, culture, and art. Therefore, I'm here tonight to request our partners, you folks, and the City of Tacoma electeds, help us celebrate our local tribal history the way you did with the naming of Yabukwali or Place of Fight, celebrating the Fishing Wars Memorial Bridge, as well as the multiple proclamations that speak to honor the rich local tribal history in City of Tacoma, that our City of Tacoma partners follow their words with action tonight. Honor your local tribal government's request, multiple tribes have formally requested that this structure be removed. Please stand by your words and honor this tonight. And for anyone arguing that this is somehow removing Tacoma's history, I welcome you to tribal historic preservation. Literally every day we watch our historic village sites, burials, and other sacred sites be paved over, demolished, and erased by housing developments and warehouses. The erasure of tribal history cannot be compared to the bastardization of tribal art. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you all.
Great. Thank you so much. Next on my list is Ellen Peters. Is Ellen Peters? And you should be off mute now.
I thank you so much to both BEST commissions for opening this conversation. I don't know anything about landmarks, but my perspective is that they mark our history and our culture. And I believe that our history is interpreted from the present and our culture is ever changing. So as we learn and we grow, we need to acknowledge the need to honor our community and our history as accurately as we can. Removal of this piece, which I will only call a piece, demonstrates our commitment to change and grow as we learn. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. The next is Jessica, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Domini. And you are off mute now.
Ganeshchish. Ganeshchish, you hut your con. Tlikaka de u yo hut de wasok. Jessica Domini, English Kenak. My English name is Jessica Domini. I am standing and living on the ancestral homelands of the Puyallup Nation, the Puyallup people, and I give thanks to them for allowing me to be a visitor on their lands and to be able to call this land home. I am Deshi Tan. I'm Tlingit from Southeast Alaska, and it is hard when you walk up to this pole as a Tlingit and Haida tribal citizen, and you know the history that of colonization that's happened within Tacoma and the greater Northwest area, and to see something like this pole standing on what you know to be the ancestral lands of the Puyallup Nation, and to know that this history of this pole was for the monetary gains of those that were seeking to plunder your own history for their own personal wealth. It hurts. And so I stand with the Puyallup Nation and asking the commission to remove this pole. We don't know whom the artists were. Nothing about this pole looks remotely like what we would have in our ancestral homelands of Southeast Alaska. I stand with our Puyallup Nation families in requesting that this pole come down and be replaced with something that is more true and accurate to their history and acknowledgement on this, their lands, that the vast majority of us on this call we are guests. And so for us to be able to recognize their land and their history and their contributions to this beautiful place that we all get to call home. I thank you very much for your time and listening to my words today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The next, Ellen Peters. Did I already call? No. Okay. That's what I thought. Thank you. Andrew Strobel. Mr. Strobel. And you are off mute now.
Thank you and good day. Greetings, Chair Bartoy and Landmarks Commission members. My name is Andrew Strobel. I'm an elected delegate of the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Seattle Community Chapter. I'm a Tlingit Wushkiton Yeti. I too am not a carver, and I won't speak of this object's aesthetics, but I'm a messenger for my people. I've been born and raised in Tacoma and the surrounding area, and I'm here to speak in favor of delisting this object as part of the historical register. My tribe's historic preservation specialist, Harold Jacobs, has had time to evaluate the authenticity of this object and is deemed to have, and I quote, no native context from day one in 1903, end quote. In Tacoma, we have a vibrant Tlingit and Haida community here, where it remains to be one of the largest communities outside of Alaska. Unfortunately, this object is not celebrated. There are no collected stories of its raising. There is no recorded participation of the Tlingit and Haida community at its raising. This poll poses a larger historical problem for of inauthentic, fraudulently produced cultural items that have plagued the Northwest for over 100 years. You commonly find plastic totem poles sold at Miner's Landing in Seattle to this day, can see photos, as I call them, in people's yards, schools, and public spaces throughout the Northwest. Objects like this have miseducated the general public on what is traditional Salish art, and have disenfranchised local Salish tribal members like the Puyallup from actually continuing traditions representative of this area. The city has spent an unnecessary amount of money trying to sustain this object, upwards of $60,000, rather than tell the story of the Puyallup, the land who this pole stands on. I can tell you this pole is not unique. The miseducation of what our practices are, how we live, what represents us, should not come from the context of people that simply ignore our voices. We are still here. Our images, our symbols, and culture are not meant to be turned into mascots, kitsch, pop art, and to be dubbed the tallest, at least not without the consent of us. Unfortunately, Tacoma has perhaps been left with not the largest totem pole in the world, but the largest culturally misappropriated object in the land. It is for those reasons I believe the pole should be delisted of its protected historic register status. Gunish Tish, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strobel. Catherine Kashkaani Edwards, and you are off mute now.
Thank you.
Pronounce your name correctly.
Catherine Kashkani Edwards. Cannot Kashkani, you had to assault. Cannot Catherine Edwards, you had to assault. I'm Catherine Edwards. I'm the first vice president for Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. And you've heard from my colleagues, Jessica and Andrew. And I too want to thank the Puyallup people for allowing us to be here and to call this place home and to share this beautiful place with them. I want to speak to and have for removal of this pole as a historic landmark for many of the reasons that you've heard. I am not a carver, but I have studied enough of it to talk to our preservation officers to know that this is not, it's not even a realistic poll. You have heard the word souvenir. You have heard the words that there are sold in gift shops in Seattle. They're also sold in gift shops in miniature form made in China, in Alaska, from every port that you go into. This is somebody's trinket. Somebody's, it's not used for traditional purposes, and I heard the preservation officer from Puyallup say that to bastardize, and that's exactly what this is. This is you guys are calling it a piece in art. I wouldn't even call it that. It's a trinket, something that you bought in the store, and it was used to extract or get money from and cover up the history of this land, and to extract resources and get money from the land, from my homeland. And it's just, it is, besides being inauthentic and an eyesore, it is abuse. It's further erasure of the true story and history of this land that we live in, that we call home, and keeping it up there is not respective of any of our tribes in the Pacific Northwest. So it needs to come down. Finish Chishin, thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Edwards. Are there any further? Oh, I see Sean Peterson. Mr. Peterson, you are unmuted now.
My name is Sean Peterson. I'm a member of the Puyallup tribe, and I am a carver, and I've talked on this subject before in the past some, and I stated some opinions about trying to find out the authenticity of this poll, working with Robin Wright and working with other carvers that included Wayne Price from Tlingit Territory. And I worked with and was mentored by Steve Brown, who was mentored by Nathan Jackson from Tlingit Territory as well. So my experience of working in this field, working with Haidas, Tlingits, Tsimshians, Neutronal Nations, is having a respect, a mutual respect for their art and traditions. And the late George David had talked about the the importance of getting permission from the First Peoples where you present work or have work. I'm not against totem poles being erected in territories on private lands, if that's, you know, people's business. It's not for anybody to say. But I'm recalling how he had said for one group of people to erect a foreign sculpture is to declare yourself a conquered people. And at the time this poll was made, we were a conquered people. We didn't have a voice, and our culture was outlawed. All of our people from Coast Salish territory to Southeast Alaska that represent these things. And these were just, as people have mentioned, more or less monetary. And it's a reminder of having art created without the people involved. So in any art form in the world, you recognize the artist who created the work and what their body of work is. And that was my question about this from the very beginning. And for the people who have a strong emotional connection to this in some way, I think my question is to them, like, well, what is the story of this poll then? If we don't know that story, we don't need to know the people who made it. There isn't a true connection other than to say, this is our rivalry against another city. And that's not a good thing to uphold and keep going at this time moving forward. That's all I have to say. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Is there anyone else here that would like to make public comment in our attendees list? Just feel free to raise your hand. Give it a couple seconds while I know people search for hand raising functions. I have done so myself. Not seeing anyone raising their hand. So I'm going to ask the commission if they have any questions. Seeing no questions from the commission, I'm going to suggest, as Mr. McKnight suggested, that we keep public comment open for 10 days. During that time, instead of reading the written comments that have come subsequently, can staff have those sent to the commissioners to read on their own time during these 10 days where we have public comment open?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yeah, we will send them to the commission. We'll also post the comments publicly, and then we'll be able to summarize and inventory those for the commission at this next meeting.
Great. So with that, seeing no one raising their hand, I'm going to close the public comment for this meeting. And thank everyone for attending and providing comment. I very much appreciate that, as this commission, as probably many people know, is a volunteer commission. So people who volunteer to have their voices heard, that's how democracy does work in this country still. So I really appreciate everyone who's come and provided testimony, and those who have provided that in written form as well. So thank you so much for all of your comments. We will move forward now with our, for clarification, since people are still here, Mr. McKnight, I know you had mentioned kind of process-wise, could you perhaps just lay out once again the process after public comment now and our next meeting that the commission will be going through, just so that we can be clear to everyone?
Yeah, sure, Mr. Chair. So the at the next meeting, the commission will consider the body of the comments that they received, and if the commission feels it's appropriate, we'll generate a set of findings and a recommendation to the City Council regarding the rescission. If the commission wants additional time to work through those findings, then there may be another meeting involved. But I, in any case, the next step will be the commission voting on the rescission and then a recommendation to City Council. And so just for the commission's awareness too, I believe Amy McBride and I are also working on a council presentation as well as a study session, upcoming meeting in June. So those are our next steps.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. And then with that, we will be moving on to our next items of business in design review for this evening. So we do have two design reviews. The first one is 511 North M Street within the North Slope Historic District. And do we have a staff report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is 511 North M Street in the North Slope Historic District. I believe we also have Brett Wyman is the representative for the owner. This house was built in 1890. It's contributing property in the North Slope Historic District. There was a stop work order issued for replacing an existing non-historic front steps or stoop and railing with a new wood front porch and steps. The existing entrance of the building is not historic, and you actually see from the photos there, there probably was an alcove of some sort that was then subsequently filled in. We have a picture from the 70s, a picture from just before, and then a now current picture. The applicant is requesting retroactive approval for the porch and steps, which they intend to paint white to match the home, as well as a new roof over the entrance. According to the applicant, the existing stoop was highly deteriorated, and the additional pent roof was added to conceal the previous renovation that removed the alcove entry and brought the door flush with the exterior front wall. Additionally, the building code requires the front steps to have a railing. The action requested is approval of the above scope of work. The recommended standards for this are the design guidelines for the North Slope Historic District regarding porches. I won't read all of those into the record. They're in the staff report. Staff's analysis as a contributing property within the historic district, it is subject to review by the Landmarks Commission pursuant to 1305.047 for exterior modifications. Item two, the replaced front stoop, step, and railing were not original to the home. There are no historic photos showing the original steps or the removed alcove entrance. Item three, although wood is an acceptable front porch material, the new porch and steps appear to be out of scale with the existing home. And for the railing and steps that meet building code are required, staff does defer a recommendation on this. And that concludes the staff report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. And Mr. Wyman, did you want to add anything?
Thanks, Ruben. That was a great summary. That's pretty much the long and short of it. The one consideration that I guess we would request is that in absence of the original, what was originally built, that moving forward, at the base, you know, that new structure could remain. There's an opportunity, I think, to lighten sort of the aesthetic and match the more historic nature of the house. One other comment from the owner is that this, I know that this is probably not the right format in order to communicate this, but the house is on the market and is has been purchased. But if at some point somebody can talk to the point of how long this process will take, and what, you know, how many weeks or however, whatever it's going to take in order to get through this, I think that information would be important for the owner to know during, you know, the attempt to sell the house.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Wyman. I think it depends on the what happens here at commission tonight for the timing, but we can definitely provide that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. So I will open this up to questions and comments from the commission. So fellow commissioners, please raise your hands. Yes, Commissioner Cade.
Thank you, Chair. I totally agree with the staff conclusion that this is out of scale, out of proportion to the house. I don't know that we have pictures of what the original porch would have looked like, but as the staff reported, this is a 1890 vintage house. And the current front porch looks more like a small deck than a front porch. And I realize part of that's because it's unpainted, but I think if it were to have a coat of paint, I think it would still look significantly out of proportion to the house. So as it is now, it to me doesn't look like an acceptable design. This is also the second time that this contractor or owner has had to come before the commission for an after the fact permit. And I personally talked with the contractor early in this project and explained that exterior renovations required permits. So I'm, you know, probably less sympathetic than I might be in other situations. The fact there's a pending sale to me doesn't make any difference. I think that the owner took the risk of not getting the permit for this structure while the house was being marketed.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Cade. Other commissioners? Commissioner Mortensen?
Yeah, I'll echo Commissioner Cade's comments about the porch and the fact of the sale being inconsequential to this commission process. And I would also add that the roof line seems very out of character with the architecture, the roof line of the new addition to the porch. And I realize this is not potentially the original entry to the building, but what I would like to see is a little bit of research by the applicant of other similar houses in the area who do potentially have their original features and entries and porches intact, and use that information to inform a better design for their property. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mortensen. Apologies. Are there any other comments or questions from the commission? Commissioner Johnson.
I'm in agreement with Commissioner Mortensen and Cade that the deck off the front really does look gigantic compared to the small footprint of the house. And I imagine that the railing is code height, but it's very heavy-handed. And the little roof over the doorway, when I first saw that, I thought it was a tent, a little piece of fabric. It looks to be inadequate. It doesn't even come close to matching anything else on the house. So, and it's very similar to that little goofy window in the gable. It just is not appropriate, and I would vote against it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Commissioner Williams.
I echo the comments. I feel like the roof addition is also out of the design of the house, not in keeping at all with anything that we would have approved. So I not only take issue with the out of scale deck and railing, I also take issue with the roof over the entry.
Thank you, Commissioner Williams. Thank you, Commissioner Johnson.
I'm back. Looking at the center picture, number 5, the little gable, the little roof line that goes off to the right from the main house appears to be much higher than the roof line over the entry now. Is that just a perspective issue, or have you reduced that side of the house in height?
Mr. Wyman?
I don't think it was any of it was removed. I think it might just be the perspective for the marketing image is the one that is labeled number 4. So I think the aperture of the early field of view or the lens was exaggerated.
Any other comments or questions from the commission? I have one question myself. So in looking at the drawing, the elevation, am I correct in assuming that the porch depicted on that elevation is smaller than the porch that's actually existing now?
So that's another example of real estate photography where everything's zoomed in. You can kind of see it in the way that the front lawn looks like it's 50 feet long, whereas it's really like 20 feet long from those retaining walls. So it's just it's a lot of forced perspective, especially you can see it in the stairs as well. Was that your question? Sorry.
Yeah, I guess yeah. The magic of photos maybe.
Yeah, it's real. It was hard. I actually attempted in Photoshop to try to get it back to a normal perspective, but I couldn't.
And just if I can, so and I want to. This was in the staff report, but just following through with it's not a question; it's more of a comment here. Just reminding Commission of the design guidelines for porches, that this is like windows, a staggered process of what's left and what we know. So I don't want to belabor it because this commission is quite smart when it comes to these things, but just the acknowledgement that, the preference is to retain existing porches and details, of course, which was not available in this case to avoid adding architecturally inappropriate detail. To replace missing porches with designs and details that reflect the original design, if known. In certain cases, the building code may trump the guidelines. I just wanted to point those out because I think that some of the commissioners had provided comments which suggest that the standards in terms of architecturally inappropriate detail, as well as at least the research wasn't reflected to see if there were additional research for this specific house or for houses of the same vintage in the same area. So I just wanted to point that out. Commissioner Kate.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out, I think that your question, at least as I understood the first question, was a comparison of the current photograph with the line drawing. And I have a photograph of my own. It looks like the edge of the front porch is considerably closer to the front window than it is to the front door, as it appears to be in the line drawing. So I think that the drawing appears to me to not reflect what the actual dimensions are.
Thank you, Commissioner Kay. I'm not as crazy as I may be on this one issue. Mr. Lyman?
Yeah, so I was just going to say that could also be true. I haven't actually been out on site to measure it. Communicated the dimensions over the phone.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? I think Commissioner Cade, you just love democracy. Mr. Wyman, did you have additional, or your hand just continued to be raised?
Oops. No, I could make a few small comments, I suppose. I get that it is a very heavy structure that it seems inappropriate for the scale of the house, and the roof is, I guess, a good attempt at trying to make something out of nothing based on the previous removal of the alcove. Is that little pent roof, is that part of the review today, or is it just the porch structure below?
Mr. McKnight, I believe it is, but Mr. McKnight, can you clarify?
Yes, it was, as far as I know, it was not included in the building permit scope originally, and it was approved by the city. So the roof and the porch / deck, stairs and railing are all part of that scope of work that wasn't originally in the permit. So I would consider that under review. It's certainly reviewable by the commission if it requires a permit. So.
Thank you, Mr. McKnight. The staff has deferred their recommendation on this application. So it's put forth to the commission. I'm wondering if there's a motion by the commission, either for approval, deferral, denial. Commissioner Mortensen?
I actually have a question for Mr. McKnight and potentially the applicant or applicant's representative. I would be interested in putting forward a motion of denial, but I know that there are processes with the city, and if this permit situation is closed and they have to open a new process, so if there was a preference to deferral, I would also be open to that, but I would not plan to put forward a motion of approval. So we'll look to staff's direction on that.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I would say that if there are specific corrections, or if there are corrections that the commission would like to see that would make it potentially approvable, like the suggestion that there should be additional research done to inform the design, the commission could defer. It's just always the deferral needs to have a sort of specific instructions to take away how to fix the design or the application. A denial would basically deny the HDR permit, and then the city would not be able to issue the permit until another HDR was applied for. There would be an appeal window that the owner could file an appeal with the city, although I think the purchase and sale, I'm just going to hypothesize, it's not really our concern, but that would be a significant time issue. So I think that from my perspective as staff, whatever we can do, the work's been done. So whatever we can do to identify how this can be corrected in a way that meets the design guidelines for the district and is acceptable to the commission would probably be the best path forward. In that case, it would be probably, a deferral would be fine too. So long as there's something to bring back to the commission, unless this is just not acceptable at all and cannot be corrected, then that would be a different situation. So.
Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Commissioner Williams?
I would vote to deny. I think we need, I think either the new roof needs to be removed, but I feel like we're owed a design that is in keeping with the size and scale of the house and the era of the home. And I don't see that reflected in this application. So I will make a motion if that's okay. Let's see here. Sorry.
No worries. The floor is yours, Commissioner.
Trying to get to the, I think that our current application is to be, I move that we deny Landmarks Preservation, deny the application for 511 North M Street based on the following design guidelines. It's basically in violation of all of the standards of the design guides for North Slope Special Review District, including porch details, adding architecturally inappropriate details, which would be that roof over the entry, replacing missing porches with designs and details that reflect the original design if known. I don't think any attempt was made to try to determine what the original design may have been. And in certain cases, the building code may trump preservation guidelines. I feel like we just don't have a design here that we can approve. So that's my motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Williams. There's a motion before the commission. Is there a second, Commissioner Hart?
I'll second that.
There is a motion before the commission to deny the application and a second. Is there discussion amongst the commission? I'm seeing none. I think Commissioner Williams, you still have your hand raised, but that's not for discussion. Maybe on mute. There we go. Okay. I'm hearing no discussion, so we'll move to a vote and vote by raising your virtual hand if you can, your actual hand if you cannot. So the motion before the commission is to deny the application before us. For those in favor of denial, please raise your hand. We have Commissioner Slessor, Hart, Morgan Ross, Stewart, Hartoy, Mortensen, Williams, and Johnson voting for denial. Let's put our hands down. Are those anyone voting? I'll put my own hand down. Voting against the motion before the commission? Commissioner Morgenroth, your hand is still raised. Are you voting? Okay. There's no one voting against, and there, I believe, no abstentions, are there? No. The motion has carried before the commission, and the application is denied. I think that Mr. McKnight can give, one second, Mr. Wyman, I think Mr. McKnight can give the kind of next steps on this, and I think that we can provide feedback here if it hasn't already been captured as to what the commission would expect for a appropriate design to move before. So Mr. McKnight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the next step as far as historic preservation staff is concerned is we will issue a written decision of denial to the applicant, upon which there is a 10-day appeal period that they can file an appeal with the city's hearing examiner or with us stating the grounds for appeal. We'll include that in the decision. In terms of feedback for the applicant, I think that is probably would be helpful. I think there's been a number of things that have been brought up, but any sort of guidance that can be given towards what, kinds of things the commission would like to see, although I know that just the design guidelines that describe that as well, would probably be helpful. But we will issue that decision probably tomorrow. And then in terms of that action, there is a 10-day appeal period.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. And I think if I can summarize from what I heard from commissioners this evening, and then commissioners can let me know if I have it incorrect or correct, and following from the guidelines that were spoken about, I think that we acknowledge that there was not an existing porch to retain necessarily in this case, or existing historic porch to retain, that there was not, I guess this would be in the standards, the number three, replace missing porches with designs and details that reflect original design if known. And if they're not known, looking by nearby ones that are architecturally appropriate, which is also the other standard there. So what I heard was that the roof line was not appropriate with the structure itself of the porch, that it did not match the other facade. I also heard that the porch was out of scale and heavy, probably in comparison with porches that would be of this period and in scale with the building. Commissioner Cade?
Sorry, I just wanted to make a quick point here that generally, this contractor has done a very nice job in this house, and the neighbors are really happy to see the renovation. And you can tell from the before and after pictures that it's a huge improvement. It's going to be a very nice house when he's done.
Thank you, Commissioner Cade. Before I get to Mr. Wyman, were there any commissioners who had additional thoughts? Yeah, Vice Chair Mortensen.
Just one other comment that I think a couple of commissioners mentioned was we'd love to see some research, either additional research of this house or houses of a similar time period to accompany a new design.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair. Mr. Wyman?
I just wanted to thank Commissioner Cade. Is that am I saying the right title? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. That was a very nice comment. I'm sure the owner who's listening in, I do believe, would appreciate that. I did actually enjoy looking into the historic neighborhood. I actually live in Columbia City's historic landmarks district, and I live in a historic home too. So I really enjoy digging deep and trying to find images and good representation of what things were supposed to look like during the contributing era. While I was doing my research and looking at the photos and everything, this house does actually kind of show up as a bit of a unique design. I guess all I can say is that I'll do my best to find a good representation of a front porch that's similar condition. But if anybody can think of, obviously, any good representations in that neighborhood of what they think, just any kind of guidance would be much appreciated. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Wyman. I think I'm going to talk probably out of turn for Mr. McKnight and Sue Hammer, but I think that the city staff could most likely find houses of the same era, perhaps through the survey data. And I'm seeing Mr. McKnight, maybe.
We'll do our best.
Thank you. Great. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wyman. I appreciate you coming before the commission and working with city staff moving forward.
Yes, thank you very much.
And I'm muted talking to myself, apologies. Just trying to find my own agenda here. We have another design review, is what I was saying. We're moving on to the next design review. That one is at 1505 North 6th Street within the North Slope Historic District. And do we have a staff report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is 1505 North 6th Street. The commission has seen this one before. As you recall, this is a house from 1903. It had a stop work order issued in January for the replacement of historic wood windows with new vinyl windows. I'm just going to kind of go over this background a little bit just to refresh everybody's memories. The owner wasn't aware of the permit requirements and had some technological troubles and so forth. There was a letter that was shared with the commission before explaining the situation and describing the original windows. We did not have evidence of the original window conditions and that the proposal that was presented to the Landmarks Commission at that time was to do a replacement retrofit of the windows in the front of the house. The commission voted to, or deferred, I guess I would say, to both request more information on the side elevations as well, including a window survey or window schedule, and then also some additional competing bids and accurate bids to show the configurations that were proposed for the house. And so the list that we have in the staff report now, and this is keyed to a windows bid that the commission did receive in their packet, and there's Lawrence put it up there with the numbers on the windows. So maybe I'll walk through this real quickly, just so everybody's sort of starting from the same spot. On window one, which is on the front, ground floor, casement, And I'm going to, there's some additional information after I read through this. So windows 2 and 3 on the front ground floor, a casement with an upper light. Windows 4 and 5, which is on the second story of the front. Casement with a simulated rail. Staff recommended double hung. Windows 6, I think that's our next slide, towards the back of the house. Windows 6 was listed as a horizontal slider. This is coming from the bid. Staff recommended, of course, a vertically oriented double hung window. Window 7, casement, staff recommended a double hung. Window 8, side lower, is also a casement window. And then windows 9 and 10, which is, I think, our next slide, were proposed to be casement. Staff recommended double hung. And the other thing to note here, as an aside, is there was a starburst mullion pattern on the front windows of the house on the second floor, the upper sashes, that there was some question as to whether or not that could be reproduced. And the answer is no, at least not by any vendor that is providing bids on this. And so it would be, I think, instead a simulated divided light window instead. And so there's some additional information on the bids that have been received. And I think Lauren has put up the most recent one. Is that correct, Lauren? That both shows that these windows are double hung instead of the sliders. And I don't know if there's additional numbers that are attached to that, Lauren.
This was submitted after the packet went out, and it does include the staff recommendations to change to double hung.
Okay. And so just working through this here, I think that these are Marvin Ultimate double hung windows, which has been reviewed and approved as replacements for the historic district. I believe these are Marvin Ultimates, I think, or they are metal clad, I believe. And then these, similar to the last time we reviewed this, the staff has included the design guidelines in the staff report. Staff does defer a recommendation on this, but this is the response to the last meeting. And so I think that the key things are originally proposed clad windows on the front elevations alone. The commission wanted to have a window schedule for the whole house, which has been provided in addition with the competing bids. And so we're back. And I think Mr. Brooks is here as well to speak to the application. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Mr. Brooks? We'll get you off mute here if we can.
There we are.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're off mute. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you for seeing me again. I don't really understand, well, the window terms that were just used. The last one I talked with the bid, he did point out that he could do a grid that matches the neighbor's house. It's not the starburst, but he could make it so it matches the neighbor's house. So he said that should be helpful. I apologize for last time. I didn't know what I needed to bring. I was incredibly inexperienced, so I didn't know what y'all guys needed. I hope everything's there. I think Lauren made it sound like it's not. I was trying to go for the first, get the front five done, save some of the financial problem. She didn't make it sound like that was too hopeful, but that's what I'm sitting here hoping for. If we can at least work with those front five windows. It's a financial thing at this point. And I know that's not your guys' problem, and I'm the one that made the mistake. But Commissioner Cade, I believe, mentioned earlier, she said she had talked to a contractor before, and that's not me. I'm trying to learn from my mistakes, and I can pinky promise whatever it takes that you guys will never have to see me on another Zoom meeting again.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brex.
I'm not very professional. I'm sorry.
You're just fine. You're absolutely fine. No worries. Commissioners, I'm opening up for questions and comments. Vice Chair Mortensen?
Yeah, I just have a quick question, and I apologize. I missed the last meeting when this applicant was before the commission. Was the original proposal to just adopt the current windows as they were, and then this is with staff's input, some updates to that proposal? Am I correct?
Thank you, Commissioner Mortensen. So the original proposal was to replace the or remove the vinyl windows from the front five of the house. When staff discussed this with Mr. Brooks, initially we encouraged him to, as he received a stop work order, to continue the process towards compliance to propose a correction to the commission, which he proposed the replacement of the front five, but proposed also to leave the side and rear elevations the way they are. And so this is, the commission asked for additional, I think a window schedule or window survey of the other sides of the house. And then also ask that the bid documents that are submitted be accurate in terms of configuration, showing what goes where and so forth. And so that's what we're returning with.
Thank you.
Can I talk? Can you guys hear me?
1 second, Mr. Brooks. Just I have it open for commissioners right now for questions or comments. Not seeing any. Go ahead, Mr. Brooks.
Was that Commissioner Mortensen that asked that last question? Am I saying that right?
Yes, Vice Chair Mortensen.
This is just something kind of for me. Like I mentioned last time, if you weren't there, I just want to point out character means a lot. And I'm not some contractor out there, and I wasn't trying to cut corners, Commissioner Mortensen, like I wrote in my letter. It would have saved me so much money and time by not touching the windows. It was an absolute mistake. I moved down from Alaska. I've never heard a historical district in a house before, so it doesn't help much. I just want to point out to her that she wasn't that I'm not some contractor out here hustling trying to cut corners or nothing. I was trying to match. There was other vinyl windows in the house. The windows were, there we go, I'm looking professional again. I just wanted to point that out. I'm not trying to hustle.
Thank you. And I did read your letter. So thank you for submitting that also.
All right. Sorry to repeat myself then.
That's okay.
Commissioner Williams.
I'm okay with the staff recommendation bid. That would be what I would be in support of.
Okay. Other commissioners? Commissioner Cade?
I agree with Commissioner Williams. I have no issues with the staff recommendation, and I think it looks appropriate.
Any other commissioners? Comments, questions? Mr. McKnight?
Just to make sure that there's not any ambiguities here, that this is the bulleted list in the staff report for the different windows, the 10 windows. The configurations as noted in the staff report is what the Commissioners Williams and Cade are in support of. Is that correct?
Yes.
Commissioner Cade?
Yes, that's correct. That's exactly right.
Okay, so that would be that's the full 10 windows.
Correct.
Yes.
So, and just as Mr. McKnight was saying, just to clarify, the bullets do provide the original application plus the staff recommendations for each that we were walked through. Okay. Any further comment or questions? Is there a motion to be entertained before the commission?
This is no to the front five. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, we are in the process of seeking a motion right now, Mr. Brooks. So
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
No worries. No worries. What will happen is the commissioner will propose a motion. It'll be seconded, and then the commission votes on the motion before us after our internal discussion.
Sweat. This is stressful.
Thank you, Mr. Kammer, for, I believe it is. Is it controlling? Or is that? Commissioners?
There has to be a modification, though, to the application. Am I correct?
The motion that would be put, well, if I'm hearing at least from what the discussion was, that the motion would be including the staff recommendations is what is being approved there.
Okay.
So for each bullet, I believe.
Yeah. I move that the Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the application with staff recommendations only as submitted for 1505 North 6th Street.
There's a motion before the commission. Is there a second? Commissioner Hart?
Second that.
Commissioner Hart. Is there a discussion on the motion before the commission to approve? This is a motion to approve the application for all of the bulleted windows with the staff recommendations where there is a deviation from the original application. Commissioner Mortensen, Vice Chair Mortensen.
I appreciate you always mentioning my title. I appreciate the applicant's willingness to work with us on this, and it certainly is very disappointing to see those starburst windows gone. I think everyone probably discussed that at the last meeting. But I just was thinking that, you know, if those windows had been deteriorated significantly, and again, we don't have evidence of that, but I think this would be an acceptable alternative if those windows were, you know, no longer functional, as opposed to had been removed. So it's a little hard to say to approve missing those windows, but again, I appreciate the applicant working with us on this.
Commissioners, if I might, is there a preference over aluminum or fiberglass? I know the applicant would prefer the cheaper option.
Commission, could you repeat that, Mr. Kammer?
Is there a preference for fiberglass over aluminum? The applicant would prefer the cheaper option.
Commissioners, Commissioner Mortensen?
We've approved fiberglass in the past, correct, as a replacement. Am I right? Okay, I see Ruben nodding.
Mr. McNair.
So I'm fine with fiberglass as part of the motion.
Vice Chair Mortensen, did you have?
Yeah, I agree with Commissioner Lyons. I think just as long as the configurations are what the staff recommended.
Okay, so Commissioner Williams was the commissioner who put forth the motion. So that's just a clarification on his motion. Are there any further discussion about motion before the commission? Hearing none, we'll move to our voting, raising your virtual hand if possible. So all those in favor of the motion before the commission, please raise your hands. I'll read off the votes. We have Commissioner Williams, Schlesser, Morgenroth, Hart, Johnson, Stewart, Mortensen, and Bartoy voting aye. Please lower your hands. Are there any commissioners voting? Oh, Commissioner Schlesser. Oh, there any commissioners voting nay? Don't believe there are any left, and no commissioners abstaining and doing abstentions this evening. So the motion before the commission passes, that's a motion for all of the windows with the staff recommendations where there was deviation, as well as the approval of the fiberglass. And I'd just like before I turn it over to staff, to Mr. McKnight, I'd just like to echo the sentiments that Vice Chair Mortensen made. I thought they were very apropos in that this is following the guidelines in the best way possible. And it is unfortunate, particularly with the unique nature, the fenestration of the lights in the one window. But yes, I do thank the applicant for coming forward before us and listening to us and coming back before us again. So, Mr. McKnight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if, as the commission has approved, we'll go ahead and write up the decision and we'll be able to send that out tomorrow and clear the historic review of the permits. And this is, as I understand it, then this is a replacement of the 10 windows with the fiberglass clad Marvin Elevate. And that is what we will convey.
And with the staff recommendations. Mr.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. Yeah. Great. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Brooks. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. We'll move on now. Hopefully I'm not on mute. I don't think I am. So we'll move on now to board briefings for the evening. We have two board briefings this evening. The first one is the UW Tacoma. As everyone knows, my favorite UW branch as an Oregon alumni. And this will be Milgard Hall, 1950 South C Street in the Union Station Conservation District. Is there any kind of staff report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a brief staff report. And I think we can either also, I know that Mr. Dominic Griffin is here and with the presentation. And we can do it two ways. We can run the presentation out of our end, or if Mr. Griffin wants to do a screen share from where he is, and present the presentation in that way. Either way is fine.
Mr. Griffin, go ahead. Is there a preference? Sorry. Oh, is that a question? Sorry, Mr. McKnight. I thought that was a question. Mr. Griffin, is there a preference for staff to run the presentation or for you to run that presentation?
I think we can run the presentation. Kim Yao, the principal in charge on the project, can run it, and she'll present it. Hi, Kim.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thank you.
I'm going to give Mr. McKnight a chance to provide a staff report first. I didn't want to jump the gun there, but I wanted to clarify that question. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. So this, just real quick, this is at 950 South C Street. This thing, the Union Station Conservation District, this also on the UWT campus, just south of the library. And so UWT's design team is going to brief the commission tonight on the proposed Milgard Hall, which is new construction. It will be home for the university's Milgard School of Business, the Global Innovation and Design Lab, and the School of Engineering Technology's new civil and mechanical engineering programs, including shared classrooms, computer labs, exterior science court, and collaborative spaces. The proposed site is the current location of the Craigle parking lot, which is bounded by South C Street to the east, 21st to the south, and the Prairie Line Trail to the west, and the Snoqualmie Building, or the library, to the north. A portion of the Craigle lot will remain. This is going to be a 55,000 square foot three-story building, which will utilize cross-laminated or CLT timber decking and glue lamb beams and columns for the structure. It's going to be an L-shaped building. It's going to incorporate acknowledge and avoid the historic coal bunker and designed to be compatible with the Prairie Line Trail. The science court is proposed within the setback to provide exterior space for research and experiments. And the project will utilize an exterior palette of brick cladding with punched windows, painted metal cladding, and accents and curtain wall glazing at stairs and public spaces. The Milgard Hall's massing and facade design are informed by the Union Station Conservation District requirements, as well as creating the dialogue with the historic mattress factory building, which is directly across South C Street. The construction is targeted to start at the end of June 2021 and be complete December 2022. So the action before the commission tonight is for guidance and feedback. This will be coming back to the commission fairly soon as an approval. So that concludes my staff report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Mr. Griffin or Ms. Yao?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. McKnight and Chair and Commissioners. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Can everybody see my screen?
We can.
Excellent. So Mr. McKnight gave an excellent introduction. I will just take you through some visuals, which were in your packet, I believe, about the site and massing of the building, and then our approach to the facade. And Dominic and I can answer any questions that you might have. I'll try to do this. There's a number of slides, so I'll try to go kind of quickly, but happy to go back to answer questions. So you can see here, in highlighted in purple, the building is proposed to occupy what is now the Craigle lot on UW-Tacoma's campus at the corner of South 21st Street and South C Street. and adjacent to the Prairie Line Trail. And you can see here just a number of views of that site in case you're not familiar with it, with a key plan. So here you can see Snoqualmie here in the distance, the Craigle Lot in the foreground, Prairie Line Trail here to the left, and C Street to the right. And view number two along the Prairie Line Trail, view number three looking down, you know, from above, and view number four looking along C Street towards 21st Street, with again Snoqualmie here on the right, and the site is the flat area past the lamppost here. And so we just have some site diagrams. As you probably all know, the site here is quite sloped. And so here on the east-west axis, we're kind of climbing up the hill. And then on the north-south axis, there's also a fair degree of slope across across our site. But you can see how it's prominently situated along the trail. And we're really imagining the building tying into these existing arteries of circulation across the campus. Here you can see that site section dropping down from the trail to C Street in the east-west direction. And it gives you a sense of kind of the scale of our surrounding buildings. This is the actual footprint outline of the building within the existing lots. You can see the existing parking lot, C Street. This is the historic coal bunker, and this is the Prairie Line Trail. And so our building kind of nestles in between the coal bunker and reaches out towards the trail to create a really good connection from the trail to C Street. The building is multidisciplinary. So as Mr. McKnight explained, we have three primary users in the building and a range of programs that are ranging from really large multi-purpose classrooms to lab spaces to smaller programs for faculty offices primarily. And so that cadence of large, medium, and small program really defines our organization of the building with this connector space, which you can see here in the center, creating that access on the east-west line to connect the Prairie Line Trail to South Street, C Street. So that's an accessible route through the building. And it really becomes a hub of activity that channels people in the community towards these different spaces. Also, as already noted, we're proposing CLT construction. And so the building has a combination of CLT panels and glulam columns and beams. We have some steel beams in this one area on the large side of the building because of our longer spans for those flexible classrooms here to the north. But essentially mass timber throughout the bulk of the building. And the building's also organized really thinking about the sun and heat load so that environmentally we can kind of meet UW's stringent standards for kind of sustainability and really kind of create a building that is a learning environment also for the students who are here in terms of building awareness about the footprint of the building. This is just showing that distribution. Again, here's the mattress factory across C Street. And so the small program we have situated there kind of to have this dialogue with the mattress factory. The lab programs are largely the medium ones here on this side facing the Prairie Line Trail. And then the larger classroom programs to the north, you can see that connector. And really for us, an idea that the building situates itself facing the mattress factory and that kind of historic fabric on the one side and then facing up the hill on the other. Between the coal bunker here and the lab wing of the building is our exterior science court. And so that's indoor-outdoor, basically outdoor learning space for students that's defined in that exterior space between the building and the coal bunker. So the coal bunker really becomes a prominent side of the site approach, site design for the building. And then here you can kind of see those larger classrooms, high impact practices space on the ground floor, two large 80 person classrooms on the third floor, and an open assembly space for the GID lab here on the second floor. I should have said, or maybe it's coming up, that it's a three-story building. So I think we have a site elevation in a minute that will show that. So it's, and we spent a lot of time thinking about the footprint of the building and the massing so that it feels contextual here with its neighboring structures. Here you can see these smaller scaled programs facing C Street and really how they're served by that connector space and look out towards the Metro's factory. And this organization becomes important when we talk about the facade approach here in a moment. But again, here facing the kind of campus context and historical buildings and then looking up towards the hill. So we can always come back to the floor plans if you have specific questions, but essentially here you're seeing our ground floor plan, the connector and this access through the building, our accessible route in terms of the landscape and site design on both sides to bring people into this space. And then our large here, our high impact practice space on the right, and a series of labs typically on the other side with office wings here facing C Street. So it's a really kind of consistent plan structured by the kind of organized by the structural grid, which you can see here played out across all three floors. Main elevator core and stair core here, and a secondary fire stair over here. And that connector space is really defined by the curtain wall, which we'll see in a moment. But you can get a sense of then kind of the rhythm of the facade as it moves around the building. So again, labs, offices, large classrooms, connector. This is the site plan. And we're working with Place, who's a landscape architect. They're the designers of the Prairie Line Trail. So they've been really instrumental in thinking about how the building integrates with that slope and the site and responds to students who are, again, walking on that north, south, and east-west axis. So you can kind of get a sense of that here. This is the exterior science court. This is the parking lot. A portion of the parking lot will remain on the south side of the building facing the street. So for the facade, we spent a lot of time thinking about the campus, historic buildings on the campus and in the area, and then of course newer construction and what that palette of materials is like. And you can see some of these photos from the campus for us, which are about that richness of the brick, but also newer materials that respond to the brick context in different ways. So you get this combination of historic fabric and new materiality, which kind of defines the campus. We also have spent a lot of time talking to UW about how the buildings there at this campus are really direct. They're honest. They expose their structure. That's something we've really thought a lot about in terms of the approach to our building. So here you can see site elevations, the three-story building along this slope on C Street. So you can see how the ground is sloping down towards the north. Snoqualmie is here immediately to the north and Tioga here up on the hill beyond, and the Prairie Line Trail is behind this elevation. So you can see the three stories and the connector. And then on the Prairie Line Trail side, we're seeing the lab wing of the building, which is defined by that metal. So here what you're seeing in kind of a purple red color is the brick side here, offices and large classrooms. And then on the opposite side, that brick wraps around. Here, this is the connector at the curtain wall. And then we have a metal rain screen that defines the lab wing. More detailed elevations just to kind of show you this. So for us, the rhythm of the windows, those punched openings, like on the C Street side, creates this dialogue with the mattress factor. So we really thought a lot about the scale and proportion of those windows. It's a really beautiful facade to create these openings that kind of elongate as you go from the top down to the bottom of the building, and then taking that kind of a varied punched window system that wraps around the brick as you go around to the north elevation. So you can see that here. So these are those large classrooms, and then it transitions at the connector to the metal rain screen to define the lab wing. And for us, it was really important to have that material transition to kind of break down the scale of the length of that facade as it faces C Street and the Prairie Line Trail. So we, rather than having one uniform material, we felt like it really helped both reveal something about the program, but also break up the length of the building by having the metal and the brick together. Here you can kind of see just detailed progress elevations, brick cavity wall, metal rain screen, and then our select areas of curtain wall. And then some views here of the building in its context. This is from C Street, again, looking towards the south. This path here to the right is an exterior path that goes up to the Prairie Line Trail. This is the entry into that connector space through the curtain wall. You can see how you'll be able to see the wood, you know, through the glazing. And that's another view looking towards the west through the connector. And then this view back on C Street, here you can see the lab spaces here to the left, that facade of primarily office spaces facing the mattress factory. So again, creating that regular rhythm of smaller windows, and then the classroom section here to the north. And then a view from the Prairie Line Trail. So on the Prairie Line Trail side, you're really primarily seeing like two stories of the building because the slope drops down. So beyond this, which is the bunker, down below is the science court, the exterior science court. And here's that high impact practice space, which is a double height space within the interior of the building with the classrooms above, the connector here, stair core. This is the accessible ramp and then stair down to the entry. So you can see how the coal bunker is here on this edge of the Prairie Line Trail, and then the path down here to C Street to the left or to the north. And Mr. McKnight already talked about the schedule, but we're basically hoping to come back to you, you know, relatively soon with a goal of starting construction later in June. And that's it. So I can, should I stop sharing or should I go back to slides? People might have questions.
You can keep it up just in case people have questions directly. Thanks. And I'll go ahead and open up for questions here. I see Commissioner Williams has a question.
I'm really respond well to this design. My question is materials for the metal portion. I'm wondering, is it rust colored or, you know, kind of, or is that close to, it's a two colored panel. That's my question.
Great question. And you can imagine we spent a lot of time thinking, pondering that question ourselves. And we've done studies with the metal in a similar color to the brick, but we prefer the metal in a contrasting or lighter color than the brick. So what you're seeing here is our kind of design intent at this moment. We are still choosing the metal manufacturer and we're still choosing our final brick. And so we have a bunch of brick samples. We're planning on looking at brick samples on the site because there's been some conversation about how we are kind of interested in a more iron spot brick, but we're also having a conversation about how maybe it's a little, you know, is it too purple? Should it be a little redder? So how do we get exactly the right brick that feels crisp and new in a way relative to our design of the building, but also is speaking to the context and doesn't feel too out of place, to be candid. So the palette that you're seeing here is kind of our intent at the moment, but as we refine our actual metal choices, it might be that we do something slightly different with the color of the rain screen. But our preference right now is to probably do something contrasting like this rather than to go with a rust colored or a red colored material. You can also see that we're probably picking up, you know, the panel here and the brick facade, that darker gray, you know, we're picking that band up in the metal facade. And so there's some continuity that happens between those materials on the sides of the building.
Okay. I know the mattress factory is pretty red.
Yes.
So that was my question, because I think it could be tough to, you know, meld those three elements, the, you know, your brick of the new building, the metal and the mattress factory. So thank you for answering that question.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that is exactly why we want to get out there and kind of look at mixes of the brick that balance out, correct, you know, balance out well.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Stewart?
Yeah, I had a question about on slide 17, page 17. There is an area on the map that's labeled community and future growth, but then it says parking lot on a different slide. And those don't seem to mesh with each other. So I was wondering what that community future growth might look like, and how that would play with the site. And then I know there's another parking lot just on the other side of the Prairie Lion Trail there. And so I was wondering if there are plans to develop that site and put a new building there, how this building might interact with that since it'll be sunken down on the hill there.
Great question. Thank you, Commissioner. So community and future growth is perhaps a little confusing with where we have that tag, but for us, that really is across the Prairie Line Trail and to the west. As you note, there is a parking lot across the Prairie Line Trail. There are no immediate plans that we are aware of on the part of the university to develop that site in the near term. But in their longer term master plan, it is a site that's identified for development. So in our from our standpoint, this is also informed, you know, our desire to put brick on the east and the northeast sides of the building and the metal on the southwest sides of the building, and envisioning that in the future that metal could kind of speak towards any future development that might occur as you move up the hill. But it's really, there's nothing planned right now. So it's less about the parking lot. There certainly could be future growth also here on this remaining parcel of the parking lot. But again, there's nothing nothing planned at the moment, and nothing that that we are directly involved in.
Okay, thank you. There was also a notes in there that you were looking at minimizing the windows on that side because of energy, and you get more sun coming in on that side. But if another building goes up there, you're not getting that sunlight necessarily. So just thinking about that as
on the south side.
On the side with the Prairie Line Trail.
Okay, yes. That's true. There would potentially be more shade. The strategy of openings and program has to also do with where our highest heat load programs are. And so trying to combine those spaces with parts of the building that have more demand because of their solar loading. So that's one reason we have the labs on this side and didn't use curtain wall in those areas. Dominic, did you want to add something?
I would just add that we're set back from the Prairie Line Trail and the parking lot across the Prairie Line Trail far enough where adequate sun would be able to come into all the windows along that western facade.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Vice Chair Mortensen.
Thank you, Chair. I just don't have a question. I just wanted to thank the applicants for their presentation and their really thoughtful design. It's very clear that the architects are working to create a responsive design for the area and the neighborhood and the university. And I think it's really successful. And I actually agree that I like the contrast of the brick and metal myself, just kind of showing, even though the brick is also going to be new brick, it just shows that contrast of materials and new and old in the UWT area, which I think you've reflected really well. So I think, yeah, just at our next meeting, I'd love to see those samples. And I think that'll probably be the biggest conversation piece at the next meeting is just making sure we're all on the same page about the colors.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Johnson?
I just wanted to say that the glass curtain walls, I like the fact that it kind of replicates, I believe it's the doghouse, has glass curtain walls. And that's nice that there's a recalling of a prior building construction. That's all. I like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other commissioners? Not seeing it. I had one question. It's just it's nothing that I'm trying to say I'm against or anything by that. But I noticed when you put the palette up of the current pallet, and maybe I just missed it, but there wasn't metal facades on the palette. Is that correct? Of what's existing on site of the campus today, you had a slide that showed examples of the palette across. I guess there's
definitely some.
Okay.
There's definitely some metal present on campus, like metal, curtain wall in areas. Obviously, something here, like where they're doing, the terracotta, which isn't brick but has that coloration. So we do see it as a material that is already present on campus.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you. Any other commissioners? Seeing none, and I'll ask, I guess, Mr. Griffin and Ms. Yao, if you have the feedback that you expected from the commission, or if there's any additional questions you have of the commission as you're planning to come forth.
This was excellent feedback, and we really appreciate the commission's time and input. Dominic, I don't know if you have questions. I think from my perspective, I think we heard about the brick, coming back with more detail on the brick choices, so we could be really specific about where we're landing with the palette. If there are any other suggestions or any other information you'd like us to include, when we return to the commission, that would just be helpful to hear.
Yeah, and I echo what you said about that. I did hear that as well. So the real being able to see actual samples would be really beneficial, I think. Okay, I'm not seeing any others. So thank you very much for the presentation. It was really excellent. I really appreciate all the angles. And again, echoing the vice chair that it was really a thoughtful, not only presentation, but construction, or planned construction.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Great. We will move on to our next board briefing of the evening, which is one I've been looking forward to, Old City Hall, 625 Commerce Street. Do we have a staff presentation, Mr. McKnight? You're on mute.
Okay. I can't find it. There you go.
No worries.
So this is staff's remarks are going to be really, really short. I think this is a briefing that everybody's been looking forward to for quite some time. And this is an extremely important building to the city. So I'm super glad to have Serge Tacoma here. The briefing is just going to be on the upcoming rehabilitation of Old City Hall, including the interior and exterior treatment, seismic retrofitting, and the overall building program. The design team is currently in permit review with the city and anticipate submittal of a final design review package before the end of May. And so this is a briefing, guidance and feedback, and also for the commission's information, because obviously we're all super, super interested in this building and this project. So that concludes my staff remarks.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. And Ms. Rosenzweig, is that correct? Am I butchering
it? Very close. Very, okay. Very close. Yes, good evening. And if it's all right, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with everybody here and give you a glance at what we've got going on over at Old City Hall.
I see Mr. Moreno is here as well.
Yes, Eli Moreno is with us as well this evening.
Welcome. Fantastic. So, it's all yours.
Thank you. So thank you everybody for your time tonight. We also are very excited to update everybody on the Old City Hall renovation project that is in permit and design review right now. So just some highlights of some things we'll be going over today. We'll be talking about our previous visits with Landmarks and Preservation, going over just a brief project summary, talking about our permit submissions, as Ruben mentioned, talking about the special building features, seismic retrofit, what we're doing on the frames, as well as the masonry repairs, what's going on with DAHP and federal approvals, as well as our timeline. And then, of course, if there's time, and we're always available in any format for questions that we can answer. So just a quick reminder of who the heck we are. So we are Serge Tacoma, and we'll be renovating Old City Hall. Our wonderful CEO is Elon Moreno, who's here with us tonight as well. And I'm the project manager, Guyan Rosenzweig. Our partners include our architects and engineers, Pacific Engineering Technologies, and our historic tax credit and preservation consultants, Northwest Vernacular. So tonight we're going to be giving you an update, and then we'll be coming back before you again, hopefully in June, for additional review. So looking forward to that as well. Just as a reminder, because it's been such a wild year, we actually presented to y'all just in February of 2020, your meeting before last, that before we had everything go virtual and we started doing everything on Zoom. So seems like another lifetime, but that's the last time that we saw you guys. So we're happy to report that we are still on track for our renovation, a full renovation of Old City Hall, with just some minor changes to our original timeline. And tonight's presentation will provide just some updates on our current status, timelines, and more. And again, next month we'll be presenting again, hopefully before you guys, for additional permit review. So just a quick summary of the project overall. We are renovating the building into a dynamic mixed-use facility. We do know that the building is in need of some substantial updates, and one of those updates is that we're going to be seismically reinforcing the building. Additionally, we'll be doing some exterior masonry and terracotta repairs, and we'll be utilizing select aspects of previous rehabilitations of the project. And our goal is always to just bring the building back to life and have this gem be alive again in downtown Tacoma. So permits have been submitted as of March 8th, 2021, as Ruben was mentioning, and we will be doing construction in two phases. So as mentioned, we're happy to announce that we are in permit review with the City of Tacoma. We submitted those drawings on March 8th, and they are currently under review with planned approval, hopefully sometime between June and August, you know, having permits in hand and really getting things started. So a lot of this information you may be aware of, and we spoke to some of these pieces last time, but we do have some additional information naturally that we've gained over the last year as we talked to vendors and have submitted our design to the permit department. So I'll just quickly go over a few of the special features here. The tower, which is a beautiful feature, that will be structurally reinforced. We will be having the bells and the clock mechanism removed from the actual tower, but the mechanism itself will be on display down on the commerce level, and the clock itself will be functional as well as the chimes. For our masonry, the interior masonry of the building is going to be reinforced with a resistance system, and then we'll be doing exterior masonry repairs, and then that beautiful terracotta will also be repaired and refinished, and I have some additional details on that in a moment here. Some other special features there at the building. We've got that beautiful copper roof sheathing. Just a little bit of that original portion remains. That's naturally going to be protected and saved. All of the windows on the exterior and interior will be preserved. There will be a handful of windows on the highest level that will need to be partially obscured but are not visible from the street for seismic reinforcement that I have some images of in a moment here. We will also be preserving our safes that are there in the building, as it was naturally originally just City Hall, so they had to store all of the documents and everything. Most of the original finishes in the building are gone. You will see some sporadic tile. We've got the lovely grand staircase. Those features are going to be preserved, but you know, again, a lot of those interior finishes are just gone with time. The jail cells that are down in the basement section will be preserved and reinforced and are going to be used as a bar space. All right. So as with any historic restoration project, you know, there are some unique requirements for Old City Hall from a structural standpoint to strengthen this building so that generations hundreds of years from now can still enjoy this building as we have for the last 100+ years. So we've been working really closely with the City of Tacoma and our engineers over the last 2 years of planning. We have our seismic reinforcement plans that have been made based off of the really unique needs of this building. Our basic reinforcement is going to include some helical piles down at the bottom. Then we'll have concrete shear walls that raise up through the building and concentrically braced frames that go around on three sides of the building in the interior. No frames on the exterior, no worries there. So in addition to the general building reinforcement needs, the tower itself does actually have some unique needs. If you kind of think about it, you've got the main building with the six stories there, and then you've got the tower that just kind of sits on the side. So it needs some special things itself. The existing brick that's there in the building doesn't have sufficient stiffness to stand up to an earthquake event. So what we're going to do is remove the floors there in the tower, and new floors will be installed along with concrete shear walls that attach to the interior of the tower. Then we'll be installing a new elevator, and as mentioned, a few windows just under that clock at the bottom of the clock. There will be one window on each corner that will be partially or completely obscured depending on the window for seismic purposes, but again, none of that is visible from the street. And if you think about looking up straight at the clock, you know, it's really hard to see those windows from street level at all, much less if there was any concrete there. So here in this slide, I wanted to show everybody some of our proposed uses for the new building. We do have another cross section in a moment because it's a unique shape. So she needs a couple of cross sections here. But we do have our we have our office spaces. We have our residential areas up on the just below the roof line. And as we'll see in the next slide, we also have some restaurant space, retail space, and what have you. And here you is a really good shot of how you can see the shotcrete in the tower is going to go. So the gray areas that are here on the sides is actually the shotcrete that's going into the tower. So on the next frame here, you'll see we have additional just cross sections. Down at the bottom, we have our office level. On that commerce main level there, we're gonna have a food hall area that'll be based out of that kitchen that, if you're familiar with how it looks right now, the kitchen will be based out of there. And some additional office, retail space, the Tacoma Historical Society will also be down on the second floor there on the main entrance of commerce, which will be an absolutely wonderful spot for them. And then here I have some information about some of our biggest repairs. So our frames and masonry repairs are really two of the biggest things that we're doing as substantial upgrades to this building. That's not to say it's all we're doing, but it is a lot of what this building needs to have done to have her stand up for a few more hundred years. So here you can see our different elevations. We do have our frames. Just to give you guys a little bit of perspective, the north elevation here is the alleyway. We've got the east elevation, which is, of course, Pacific, and the west elevation, which is Commerce, and the south, and the south is 7th, and southwest is just that little corner that goes off of 7th there. So as you'll see, we've got our concentrically braced frames here. Again, these run on the interior of the building and cross at certain window sections. Most of these windows you're not going to be able to see any kind of framing from the outside. And on the next slide, you'll be able to see an example of where these frames run on the interior so that you can get a better perspective of where these are running up against the windows. So for these frames, you can see some of these beams will be placed directly up against the brick, and others will be placed away from the wall. So only, again, as I mentioned, at certain locations will you be able to see the beams. And due to the large number of windows that you see here, there was no way to completely avoid crossing the windows, but this was minimized as much as possible. So here on this slide, just to give you a little bit of perspective of where these frames are going in the building. So we've got the north side, the alleyway over here. We've got Pacific running along this way, Commerce running over here. This is one of the interior floor plans, just as an example. And here is where those frames are going to be located. The yellow lines are where the cross frames will go, and the red dots, the red squares are then showing where the vertical I-beams will be going that you saw in the previous frame. We've also got our additional concrete shear walls that rise up through the whole of the building, as well as, again, in the tower here. You can see that we have our shotcrete around there. So, As we mentioned, we will be making exterior repairs to the masonry and terracotta. The exterior brick and terracotta are two of the most impressive features on this building, as anybody who's walked by knows. And we are planning on quite a bit of exterior repair work. Full details we do have on our plans, but I did, as with the other items, want to give a brief overview here. We will be repointing the brick, exterior bricks, in specific locations. There are several lintels that are in very, very bad condition that need to be investigated and repaired. We'll be repairing those second and third floor arches, some of which are currently braced with wood. We'll be repairing those in full, improving the waterproofing at the porthole windows that you can see, the round ones. We've got the concrete frame down on Pacific Avenue. That's a very large concrete frame that's going to be repaired. We've got our sandstone lintel blocks that'll be repaired. There's some missing and damaged terracotta lintels, as well as repairs of delaminating sandstone, and then repairing and replacing just additional terracotta that are not lintel pieces, because they're the lintel pieces and then the additional terracotta that's there. And we're going to be rerouting the downspout and repointing the masonry that is there around the downspout. So, it's very exciting work. We'll give her a nice little facelift on the outside. So this project is being submitted for federal historic tax credits, and our permit drawings are currently under review. We did send an amendment to our Part 2 application in January of 2021 for our phasing, and updated drawings with our seismic and architectural plans were submitted just after we submitted for permitting on March 15th. So those updated drawings are all currently under review, and of course, we've been in that application process for quite some time, so this was just kind of putting the finishing dots on everything. We do have an exciting action-packed few years ahead of us, with the majority of the building being planned to be open by spring of 2023. So our permits for both phases are expected to be issued between June and August, July, September of this year, 2021. Our phase one construction will then run from September 2021 to March of 2023, with the building opening for phase one in the spring of 2023. Then our phase two construction will run immediately right after that, from March of 2023 to September 2024, with that phase opening then in the fall of 2024. So with that, that is the update that I have. A lot of information, and I thank everybody for their time this evening. I know there was a lot going on tonight, but we're really excited to be able to update you, and I'd love to address any questions you have at this time. And as always mentioned, we are available at any time for additional questions.
Great. Thank you so much. I'll open it up to commissioners' questions. Commissioner Mortensen, Vice Chair Mortensen.
No questions. I know that Mr. McKnight and our chair expressed their excitement, and also I think everyone else is very excited to see this move forward, and hard to believe that that was just last February that we saw you. But I just wanted to comment that it's really nice to have both of these briefings actually. With such care and thoughtfulness of the context, and with the other one, the context with the new building, and with this building, not only the context, but it also the existing building and materials. Obviously, I think you've also done a really great job working in those seismic elements, and that's just how brick buildings need to be reinforced. And that's, and we'll see a little bit of that for the windows, but I don't think it's going to take away at all from the beauty and importance of the building. And neither am I concerned about the filled in windows. And of course you all are going through the DAP review as well. So I think this is an amazing project, and we'll not have any problems approving this when you come see us again.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there other commissioners? Commissioner Johnson.
I just want to echo what Commissioner Mortensen said, that it looks like you've got some good plans, and if everything goes as planned, it'll be a wonderful building. Thank you.
Other commissioners? Seeing I think I express the gratitude as well. It's amazing to see this. Actually, I express amazement and congratulations for being able to keep a schedule. I know I was on the panel during selection that you were victorious on, and one of the things I know that kept coming up was the schedule and the aggressiveness of the schedule. And despite a pandemic, being able to stick to that is pretty incredible, especially now. So hopefully the prices of things don't throw you for a loop. I know that's a big issue right now in construction.
That's not as grandfathered in as some of our things, but.
Okay. If there's no other questions from the commission, I did have one, and it's of interest just because, where I work, we're trying to gauge what the future looks like post COVID. And I know, in transportation, we're not sure. It's very up in the air what it's going to look like with telework. And I mean, a lot of it has to do with people working differently. And I know a big part of your presentation and proposal was shared workspace and offices and those types of things, innovation space. I'm not sure how you call it. But I'm wondering if there's been any, and of course we wouldn't be reviewing this, but it's just a concern every time I see this. I've been thinking about this. Is there any thought to kind of the changing in patterns or needs for those types of spaces as we move out of the pandemic scenario?
Definitely, always keeping an eye on what's going on in the world and what people.
Oh, we can't quite hear. I'm sorry, we can't quite hear you.
Oh, my apologies. So yeah, we're always keeping an eye on what's going on in the world and what things are happening with office leasing. What we're seeing with co-working is actually really interesting because folks aren't wanting to necessarily do your 10, 20 year leases as much right now, that the co-working is actually still very popular. So that's a really great thing for us. And we're seeing that things are constantly changing. We are all adapted to the Zoom environment now. What that's going to look like in a couple of years when we get done. I kind of think of it as an interesting thing because it's an Italian Renaissance building and it was built in here in our, city of destiny and there at the port. And I have a feeling that we're going to see another Renaissance of office space as well as we come out of the pandemic. And we're seeing that with co-working as well. People don't necessarily just want to stay home, but how we rent it, how we market it, those are things that are always areas that we want to pivot on and be at the front of the pack.
That's great. It's great to hear. I figured you're on top of that. Well, I express extreme gratitude, that you've taken on this very important building in Tacoma. I mean, I think that, it's fitting that you came after a presentation from UW Tacoma, which I really think is one anchor of our downtown and the revitalization that's happened. That's really embrace the history of Tacoma downtown, what we had left of it after urban renewal in quotes. But looking at this side of downtown, I think this building and McMenamins are going to be great, anchors that are really going to lead the further revitalization, and particularly of this end of downtown. So it's really just great appreciation of what y'all are doing. Great. Thank you so much. And let me see here. With that, we move on to preservation planning and board business. So I will hand this off. Is this Mr. McKnight? I see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am actually going to hand off the discussion of the Historic Preservation Awards to Zoe, who's been working on the nominations and on the summary for staff to read, or sorry, for the commission to review. So it looks like Lauren has it up on screen right now, and I'll let Zoe take it away.
Good evening, commission. In case you guys are not familiar with our Historic Preservation Awards, we usually pull them out around Historic Preservation Month and in celebration of preservation work throughout the year that is, extraordinary. And in the year that we have had, I'm going to use a term that we've all heard, which is in this unprecedented year, it definitely has shown even more how resilient so many of our preservation workers and people in heritage across the board have been. So these are a couple of the people that we have nominated this year. This document that we have pulled up has nominations for this year, as well as a list of all of the nominations that we have had for previous years from 2019 to about 2002. And we don't have any for 2020 because I believe we didn't have them last year. So we are looking at what we have this year. Number one is a nomination for community engagement and events. And it is from the nominator is Jeff Dade. And he is nominating, Forterra, I believe. And I'll read to you what the reason for nomination is. I'll try to keep this short. We have about six or seven nominations. So the reason for nomination is that the Forterra Community Development Team is partnering with Hilltop to preserve 150 years of Blackness in the area. A year of intense pre-development community engagement, continuing the Design the Hill activism at the old Rite Aid on 11th and MLK. It's crucial in renovation economics to combat the racial wealth gap locally by bringing representation to Black folks via preference, deeply discounted access to home ownership. So that one is for community engagement and events. Our second nomination, nominator is Jim Lauderdale, again, for community engagement and events. And the nominee is Elizabeth Rudred, I hope is how you pronounce that, through the Fort Nisqually Living History Museum. And the reason for nomination that they have written is that in the midst of a global pandemic, when many museums were forced to close and end all programming, Fort Nisqually Living History Museum has captivated our audience virtually. Elizabeth Rudred, events and volunteer coordinator, developed a virtual series, Fort From Home, where museum interpreters present a one-hour presentation once a week to engage our museum audience wherever they may be. Fort From Home had offered 17 programs in 2020, and topics included Victorian cooking, women, firearms and the fur trade, blacksmithing, apple pressing, watercolor painting, shoemaking, and many other programs. This virtual content brought the, brought the cultural resources and interpretation of the museum into our communities and homes in a time when they could not or did not feel safe to get out. In addition to Washington, attendees tuned in from California, Oregon, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, Minnesota, Illinois, Tennessee, Georgia, and even Toronto, Ontario. The success of these programs led other museums to access questions and seek advice for their own virtual programs, which Elizabeth kindly shared with them. These programs were offered by tiered ticketing programs, ensuring greater access to those with fewer resources available to them. Feedback for the program has been excellent. Survey responses indicate 99% satisfied or very satisfied with the program. 95% rated the content and presenter as a 5-star excellence, and 70% returned for at least a second program. The innovation and creativity in programming has not only kept Fort Nisqually relevant to our community, but also expanded our audience in a time of hardship and experienced by the world. Okay, moving on. We've got nomination number three. Nominator is Michael Sullivan, and the nominee is Mike Barlett from Horizons Partners Northwest. And the reason for nomination is the brewery project. Oh, pardon me. This is for commercial renovation. The reason for nomination is the brewery project, Hunt Motel Hardware and Warehouse, is an exceptional demonstration of best preservation practices blended with new cross laminated timber, wood technology construction. The project created four floors of new housing in the UW-Tacoma neighborhood, followed Secretary of the Interior standards in rehabilitating the masonry and timber warehouse, and created two street level floors of new retail space in the Union Depot Warehouse Historic District. The newly constructed upper floors followed the original design of Burlard Hill Architects, prepared for the hardware company in 1906. Alrighty, our fourth nomination is again for community engagement and events. And nominator is Claire Keller Schultz. And the nominee is Fort Nisqually Living History Museum. Their reason for nomination is that they would like to nominate Fort Nisqually Living History Museum for their March 11th, 2021 event, Puget Sound Treaty War Panel, presented virtually. The Puget Sound Treaty War of 1855 to 1866 was the result of contested terms of the Medicine Creek Treaty negotiated by Governor Isaac Stevens. The special program brought together a panel of historians to discuss the experiences and effects of this pivotal moment in regional history. The Puget Sound Treaty War Panel events represent a significant step forward in interpreting the full 19th century history of this area, and the panelists represented important voices that, by and large, have previously gone unheard. This free event was very well attended and successfully integrated viewpoints and reflections from a diverse panel of experts for a thoughtful, engaging hour and hour and a half discussion. This event was hosted as a webinar, and participants were able to ask questions and leave comments in a moderated chat forum. Fort Nisqually Living History Museum deserves recognition for the work of creating and organizing this event and for collaborating closely with Charlotte Bosch of the Puyallup Tribe Historical Preservation Department to make sure the appropriate people were involved. By featuring Brandon Runyon, Tribal Historic Preservation Officer of the Puyallup Tribe, Jerry Ekram, historian of Fort Nisqually Living History Museum, Margaret Henry, oral historian of the Squaxin Indian Tribe, Nessie Bullchild of the Nisqually Tribes Archives and Tribal Historic Preservation Officer Director of the Nisqually Tribe, Warren King George, historian of the Muckleshoot Indian Tribe, and having Jennifer Ott, Assistant Director of HistoryLink.org as moderator. The event represented the beginnings of a new chapter on historic interpretation at the local level. By creating a space for Indigenous knowledge to have equal weight with traditional academic historic sources, the program illustrated the importance of co-creating history. Events like this help us recognize the multitude of perspectives that are necessary to grow in understanding of how the past continues to impact the present and where we need to course correct for a better future for us all. All right. Pardon. There we go. Number five nomination is relatively short. We've got our nominator, Jeff Williams, is nominating Katie Pratt and for solid research in a previously unstudied area of Tacoma, primarily for landmark nomination to be recognized. Our sixth nomination is leadership and preservation. Our nominator is Lacey Wright. And the reason for the nominee is Fred Robertson for leadership and preservation. And the reason for nomination is that Tacoma Arts Live nominates Fred Robertson for the 2021 Leadership and Preservation Award. Known as Tacoma's Prince of Preservation, Fred has worked closely with our organization to gift the historic Tacoma Armory of Tacoma Arts Live and secure a long-term lease that will promise a future for the venue filled with events and office spaces. Mr. Robertson has done the same for the University of Washington Tacoma and the Carlton Building. He continues to restore the buildings in Tacoma, such as the Harmon Building, the Olympic, and many more. He gives people a chance and often hires workers and other companies that other companies may not. Tacoma Arts Live is grateful to Mr. Robertson for stewardship and courage in our community. And finally, for staff recommendations, this is someone that I have nominated for community engagement and events. And I have nominated Pretty Gritty Tours specifically for their current program that I also suggest that you all check out, which is called Tacoma Noir, and it is a four-part murder mystery miniseries. So in celebration of Historic Preservation Month 2021 and in partnership with the City of Tacoma, Pretty Gritty Tours has launched an interactive historic fiction murder mystery series titled Tacoma Noir. Based on Dashiell Hammett's time in Tacoma in the 1920s, this four-part audio series explores Tacoma's underbelly and crime world a century ago. Every Thursday night, listeners can tune in to YouTube or Facebook and put their detective skills to the test by following along to clues about a fictional murder in Tacoma. Each episode focuses on a historic structure in Tacoma, and Pretty Gritty Tours on their website has posted resources and links to the Tacoma Pierce County Buildings Index, and all of the resources can help sleuthers uncover clues and hopefully discover, uncover the murder before the narrator does. So that is that recommendation. And that is all that we have. Again, I have listed in this packet as well the past recipients. And I apologize, I realize that I also did not even mention what the categories were for all of these. So I do want to remind you about what those were. They were for residential renovation, commercial renovation, leadership in preservation, organizations in preservation, community engagement and events, and heritage legacy businesses. However, the only ones that we received for this year seem to be in community engagement and events, leadership and preservation, and commercial renovation. So that is, I believe, all I have with that. Great.
Thank you, Ms. Gutierrez. Oh, Ms. Schuhammer?
Just wanted to jump in and let you know, always you can change the categories, you can create new categories, and you can nominate things that pop up right now as you see fit. So it is completely up to you.
This is the whose line is it anyway time of the year for us when we do as we will with these important awards. So I don't know if, does anyone have any, I'm going to say it before so everyone can think about it a little bit. I know we're running long here, but you know, the heritage business one has always been a big one since we started that one for me. So I'd really like us to try to put our thinking caps on that one. But I'll just open it up for folks. Any comments on these? It seems like a very good, quite a few really good nominations.
Throw some stuff support behind the Forterra nomination.
Yeah. It seems like we have a lot in community engagement and events. It's not a problem. I guess we can give out as many awards in as many or few categories as we want. I do notice we have a couple for Fort Nisqually, but they're different events on Fort Nisqually. Those are just a couple of the things that stood out to me in terms of structure. I didn't know we had a Prince of Preservation in Tacoma. That was also new to me, but go ahead, Vice Chair Mortensen.
I'm just wondering, do we have a document that just lists the nominations and the categories as a very bite-sized summary to see them all at once, or no? Sorry, I don't remember seeing this in the packet. So
no, I can. I'll pull one up in the chat right now.
That'll be perfect. Thank you. I just general comments. I really appreciate all of the nominations, especially the commercial renovation one. I think that that's a great, great one. And I wonder if, Lauren, it seems like we might need to bring back the Broadening Horizons Award, because it seems like we've got some organizations that are really working to expand their, acknowledgement and involvement in history. So,
yes, I would recommend that we move some of these that are in community and engagement and events to the organization or that Broadening Horizon, because it looks like we got four in the one category.
Yeah, exactly. So, perhaps it would make sense to move Fort Nisqually to the organization category, since they were nominated twice for multiple events. Well, one for a sort of a general nomination and one for a specific event.
Do you think, Vice Chair, that the Fort Nisqually Treaty Wars might fit within the Broadening Horizons?
That too.
I do remember that was a good category, I think. It's 2019 category.
Yeah, it had to do with our theme that year, I think. Mm-hmm. So we added it.
Any other? Oh, Commissioner Stewart, sorry.
I was also going to propose that you could split community events or community engagement and special events into two separate awards.
I think that's a great suggestion, particularly for the Forterra. I think the key on that one is really engagement. Any other thoughts? So just recapping, I'm hearing that we split community engagement and community events. Forterra being recognized under community engagement.
Maybe community engagement and public events or special event.
So I would recommend Forterra for organization, Elizabeth for engagement, and Fort Nisqually for events, to separate that up.
Not Broadening Horizons?
Or Broadening Horizons.
That sounds good to me. Does anyone have other thoughts on that? I'm hoping someone's taking notes. That's my thought right now.
You have all this, Zoe?
I think Zoe's busy copying and pasting. We may have to repeat that.
Yeah, give it to me the first ones one more time.
I think we had, is this correct? We said Forterra as organization?
Or did we say Forterra for community engagement?
Yeah, I thought it was more engagement for that. Can we split that out and just have a community engagement?
Can do whatever.
Forterra for community engagement. The treaty panel for Broadening Horizons. And then would the, the nomination was for an individual for the other Fort Nisqually, the Red nomination. So I don't know if that should be for organization, since they were calling her out specifically on that front. I don't know what folks' thoughts are on that. I mean,
I guess one thing I would say is that over the past year, there's been a lot of really innovative programming that's been done virtually that represented trying to, keep people engaged in history despite some, pretty big challenges and people having to be really, really agile. So it's almost like it's its own unique category right now in a way, if that makes sense to anybody.
Kind of the going virtual, the virtual pivot award or something.
The pandemic pivot award.
Pandemic Pivot Award. Do people want to remember that? I don't know.
probably if we had publicized that as a category, we might have gotten some interesting applications on the Pandemic Pivot. The
Seaport Museum went completely virtual also.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of good work that's been done.
I mean, it might be a good thing to recognize too. It is a special year. I mean, what are people's thoughts of having that Fort Nisqually, the Red nomination under something like Pandemic Pivot Award, special award?
It's catchy, but maybe we could have a better name. Yeah.
COVID like can't catch me.
Something to do with innovation, like innovation in fill in the blank.
Virtual innovation?
That's a good one.
Digital innovation?
Thoughts? Oh, go ahead. Vice Chair?
I was just going to say, I like innovation, and I'm trying to think of other... I like virtual innovation. I'm just wondering if we want to make it a little bit broader so that we could use it again, even if it's not for virtual purposes. Just
Innovative programming.
Innovation in programming, innovation in outreach. You remember those too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, outreach.
About innovation in programming and outreach.
Yes. That sounds lovely.
Innovation in programming and outreach.
My favorite awards process. I don't know how many other people do it this way, but I love it. It's like you can give perfect. Any amount of awards in any category that you want.
I will say that the first one I was involved with, I still remember fondly, we actually did take out either a dry erase board or a chalkboard, and there were things written and there were tallies taken. But it varies every year.
I wonder, and I'm just shooting from the hip here too, that, we Pretty Gritty got an award in 2019. They do great stuff. They're a great partner to the city. But I kind of wonder if the commission wanted to acknowledge the Noir series as part of the innovative programming. That's the kind of category you might consider doing multiple awards into.
Yeah.
This one's a little awkward too because it's ongoing and it's also a city event. So we developed it with them. So should we give our own programming an award?
I'm wondering, so Pretty Gritty has partnered with multiple organizations across the city this year. And I'm wondering if maybe their award is more in that cooperative aspect, because they partnered with Job Carr, they partner with Foss Waterway, they partner with the city, they've done a whole bunch of different collaborative efforts this year.
What about our multimedia award? Because they've really been bringing everybody into that.
Yeah, so that might be more appropriate than specifically focusing on this one program that they're doing that's still underway.
Do we have a multimedia award?
We do now.
I like it.
I will say that I agree with Holly that basically every heritage organization I know of has turned to Pretty Gritty and said, can you do stuff for us because we don't have the infrastructure to do it? And it's been really, really positive partnerships. So
maybe we used to have a partnerships in preservation. Didn't we have something like that in the past? We had some kind of partnering. Is that what you want to emphasize with? Or do you want to, I guess the question to me is, do you want to emphasize the fact that they're partnering and helping out all these organizations or that they're coming up with kind of innovative types of programming?
I guess they are paid partnerships. So I would say the multimedia part is probably the more of the excellence part, in my opinion.
It's okay if you get paid to do it.
I'm okay with that.
Didn't get paid for ours.
Oh,
there you go. Okay.
Maybe I just got lucky, but.
You shouldn't have said that. Now Lauren's going to go back and talk to him.
Demand satisfaction. I personally like the partnership angle just because of the wide variety of organizations they've partnered with, but I'm certainly open to other commissioners' thoughts.
I like the idea of a partnerships in Preservation Org, and then we can highlight it during the ceremony, like just try to get the, you know, list of folks that they've worked with this year. Okay, so I think we need to have a recap of where we are, and Zoe, I really hope you're taking notes, because this is how it works. This is your first time here, but you'll realize that the categories and nominations come fast and furious at our at our meeting.
I do. I definitely have them if you want me to read them out real quick to you.
Yes, that would be great.
I've been away in the chat for too long. Okay. What we have so far is, so for Forterra, we're going to do community engagement. Elizabeth Rudd at Fort Nisqually is getting innovation in programming and outreach for pandemic. That was the pandemic pivot, the one that we need to come up with a better innovation in programming and outreach. Then there is Mike Barlett with Horizons Partners Northwest, and they're just commercial renovation, and no one really seems to fight on that one. Fort Nisqually, their specific event about the Puget Sound Treaty Panel is just going to get events.
I think that one's Broadening Horizons.
That one is Broadening Horizons.
Broadening Horizons, yeah, and it would be the actual event itself.
Yeah. Gotcha. And then we have Fred Robertson for leadership in preservation, and Pretty Gritty Tours gets partnerships in preservation.
And Katie, former chair, Katie Pratt.
Oh yes, and then yes, and she is. What is she? Where did she go?
The landmark nomination.
Yes.
The nominator has a credibility problem with the commission, but we can forgo that, I guess.
Yeah, I would recommend that Commissioner Williams would probably have to recuse on that vote.
Yes. These votes are very official, though.
So, and I just, for the record, too, I want to just call out just the Brewery Blocks project. I mean, this is pretty cool stuff, a really neat project. And so, you know, just I want to say that for the record, that you know, the Horizon Partners has done a lot of really, really tremendous work in preservation in Tacoma, and this is another one of those projects. And so just wanted to highlight that.
What that reminds me, what is the award that we created for McMiniman's? Remember, we had like a best in show. We titled it something.
I think it was Preservation Excellence or Excellence in Preservation, something like that.
Why don't we do that? We tried. I mean, this is a big, you know, big enough thing.
We could do that. We have then no rehabilitation award.
Oh, well, that's true. Let's just, no, forget it. It's already in a good category that we didn't make up at this meeting. So
I should probably leave. Yeah, that's why I just wanted to bring it up, just because, you know, we went through this, like there wasn't a ton of discussion on it, but I just wanted to just raise the, you know, the awareness that, that, you know, it's just it's another great Horizon project. So.
Okay. Well, I think these are, they're all great. I think that I would still like to see a historic business, legacy type of business. I wanted to nominate the Swiss 2 years ago. That's unfortunate. That, yeah.
Chair Bartoy, do you have any comments on the Fred Roberson?
I'm not familiar, so. Does anyone else have comments?
Well, I'm looking through the list. I'm having a hard time believing that he hasn't been nominated for an award before, because you know, Fred has done a ton of projects in Tacoma, oftentimes involving challenging buildings that, you know, other people would not have touched. And I think that the other thing is that he was one of the early believers in historic rehab. So the Harmon Building, for example, was the biggest, you know, preservation project at the time. And it was a huge, complicated project, and the special tax valuation was complicated. This is considerably before I got here. You know, in the Armory and the partnership with Tacoma Arts Lab and so on, I think that, you know, there's just a lot of really important work that's been done over those years.
It's been a lifetime achievement for a while.
Oh. And he hasn't shown up in any of the awards.
Well, that's what I was looking. I was looking through the, I mean, we have such, you know, our records going the farther back you get, the weirder they get.
We're just keeping that weirdness going by changing all the categories and making things up tonight.
I see Bob's Java Jive got on there in 2005, but that's that might be a heritage business.
What about the SPAR?
Oh.
I don't see them on the list.
Best fried chicken in Tacoma.
I was also thinking about Engine House number 9.
I was thinking that as well.
Been on the list before, but actually, they just updated their website, and I finally understand the difference between Engine House Number 9 and E9 Brewing now. I was very confused for a while, and now they've explained it a little bit better on their website.
I feel your confusion.
See, in 2010, we didn't really know what we were thinking about. Someone named Roger Johnson got an award.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Actually, Engine House Number 9, I was involved in the rehab and the restoration of that when it was still a crummy old building, and then Dusty Trail finally got a hold of it and nominated it for a national recognition. And I don't know that it is on the Tacoma Register, but
E9.
The brewery used to be right next door to the bar, tavern, and then they moved downtown.
Just for disclosure, I did go to high school with Marissa Trail, Dusty's daughter.
Oh, you're that young?
Thank you.
she's our
first compliment to me from Commissioner Johnson. All right. Well, how about, it sounds like we've missed, with Fred Robertson, we've missed opportunity there, it seems like. So would a lifetime be, like a lifetime achievement award be appropriate? Even more so than the leadership?
Or is he still working? Because I know some people don't like to get lifetime achievements.
Yeah, they good feel point.
Like he's not going to want a lifetime achievement. He's going to want the leadership. Award that he was not, yeah.
Okay. Let's keep it leadership then. That sounds like we missed that one. And I'm kind of seconding Commissioner Johnson's non-motion about Engine House 9. And I think they do a great job on the history there, even putting it into the beers. If you haven't been there and seen the horse stalls and then know why something's called Rowdy Dick and all those things, and, you know, to have a beer named after a horse is pretty cool.
So would you want that one for legacy business?
Yeah, I think so. What? How's that title of that? It's almost 50 years old in itself, isn't it? Anyways.
Are we missing nominations in other categories, though, that we already have existing categories for?
I think we don't have organizations. We kind of split things up a little differently, so we didn't have an organization one. But other than that, it's really
there's
the
not a resident. There's not a residential one.
Some guy put one in, and we said that would be okay.
No, that was for the for the landmark nomination, not for the house itself. It was for Katie's work.
I think we are missing a residential.
We are missing a residential.
Yeah.
Nomination.
What about that Dove Street house?
Oh, that is a good one. I remember that came across a couple months ago.
Yeah, they did the restoration, and then they landmarked it, and then they did a special tax valuation.
The one that rebuilt all the woodwork inside?
They're really, like, stunning, big, like, one we all were, like, crazy about, right?
Yeah, the owners did it, as I remember, like, it was like a labor of love type of project for them. They did seem to go above and beyond with the research, you know, they did all their own research and interior and exterior. How does everyone feel about that one?
Good.
If we can figure out which one it was.
We know the street.
Yeah, Gove Street.
Right now.
Oh, this is the Wells R. Sears house.
Yes. That sounds right.
Yes, that's a tremendously cool four square farmhouse.
Yeah, on Gove Street. That's the one.
Yeah. I think that's a winner.
Chicken dinner.
Might have me thinking about the spar in 99.
Hey, it's Tacoma's oldest bar, so you can't go wrong with that.
Is that the spar?
That's the spar, yeah.
Maybe we should go with the spar.
I love it. And it's still owned by the same, like, same family.
And I guess the nomination.
If you want to talk about legacy.
It's a heritage business, right? I mean, that was the purpose of it, was to recognize, you know, because we recognize Johnson Candy. Unfortunately, we recognize, well, not unfortunate that we recognize Lincoln Hardware. Unfortunate that they're not a business anymore. Hoping we can stop that trend that we've had with our awards here.
We'll point out that E9 claims to be one of the oldest microbreweries as well. So they're not 50 years old, but I know we don't really have a year threshold.
Zoe?
Obviously.
So to recap, are we on board with Gove Street for the residential?
Yes, I think that was unanimous.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So now we've got this one to decide. And then did we confirm the nomination for Katie Pratt?
Yes, we did.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. I'm on board with that.
So this one's going to be one we battle out, it sounds like. Our heritage business. I like them both.
I mean, hopefully they'll both be around next year.
Yes, is someone keeping notes? Because this is all good stuff we're throwing out here for next year as well. It can expedite the process.
I did have a question as to what you guys what is considered a heritage business. Like, do we have a time period? You know, are we throwing that 50-year mark out there? Does it have in a, you know, in a special building? I mean, you know, where are we with that?
In our bylaws, there's very specific things called out.
Mm. No,
this was created. So I think the idea, if I remember the recesses in my brain, the first folks to get it were the Johnson Candy Company, then Lincoln Hardware. So the idea, I think, behind it, and why is it a heritage legacy business, was that it's actually the business itself, not necessarily, you know, so it is, well, and we did have a debate on that, actually, because we had one of the brewing companies who was embracing Tacoma's history, who's no longer embracing Tacoma's history, that we were talking about nominating, I remember, at one time for that. So
do we know that the SPAR has been owned and operated by the same family?
No, it hasn't. Kathy Mankey owned it for a while, and she just recently sold it.
Yeah. She sold it to her granddaughter.
Oh, really?
So it is still in the family.
Still in the family.
Then I vote for SPAR.
I'm fine with SPAR.
Yeah? Will everyone go for SPAR?
I'll refloor and nominate E9 next year.
So we're all meeting at the SPAR? Is that what I hear?
That's what I was about to say, Commissioner Johnson. You took the words right out of my mouth. Once we can take our masks off, we can raise a toast at the SPAR, perhaps.
As long as there's not quorum.
That's right.
That's right.
Did we confirm the was pretty gritty partnerships?
Yes, yeah. Partnerships and preservation.
Yeah.
Got everything, Zoe? Did we get everybody?
So I think we could probably just keep the community engagement and events title, since we called the event one Broadening Horizons, just for consistency. And it sounds like we now also, though we don't have an organizations in preservation, which is fine if we don't, but that's another one that could be Flora nominated if people had any ideas.
I mean, with the organizations, I would say there were a lot of people who struggled this year with everything and, you know, came through. So if you can think of anybody, I think it'd be great to recognize as many nonprofits as possible.
Well, Historic Tacoma, did they get one last year or 19?
I think we've gotten it in the past. I don't know how far back it was, though.
Yeah.
We done one for Surge?
That's what I was thinking. I'd say it's not too early.
I think it's too early.
You do?
Too early?
Yeah, I think they should be, once they, you know, come up with an end product.
I would agree. I think that it's also, I think you don't want to steal the thunder from the end of, you know, the hurrah at the end of the project as well.
Yeah.
That one, I mean,
we waited on McMenamins because of that too.
Yeah. And to bring back that excellence award.
Well, does anyone have we don't have to have every category, but I agree with Lauren that if anyone has an organization in mind, it was a tough year. I'm hearing thinking, but I'm not hearing any words.
I think it's also fine to move forward with the slate that everybody is agreed upon. That's okay. And I mean, we got a good slate. So yeah.
Let's, do we need a vote? I forget. Sometimes we take votes, sometimes we don't take votes. Is that correct?
In this particular case, it's not really a quasi-judicial decision, and it's not affecting any. So, I mean, if the commission wants to take a vote, that's fine. If the commission just wants to do it by acclamation, that's fine too.
Yeah, how about we have a final reading of all the, if no one has any more nominations, we'll have a final.
Actually, I might make one nomination, and I would request Ruben and Lauren's thoughts on this, again, about stealing thunder, but perhaps the Colored Women's Club of Tacoma as an organization. I know they're working on that Nettie Asbury House, but this year has been a big year of negotiation and advocacy for support from the state budget. And as long as the governor signs what's been written, that's happening. So that seems like a pretty big achievement. So that's another one that came to mind for organizing.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel that way with a little bit with the Forterra nomination as well. That's a possibility too. We've awarded two to multiple groups, you know, is kind of one big group. I don't know if Lauren has an opinion also on that. But I do think that, I mean, the Asbury House has been a long discussion, and lots of people are working on it right now, including the CWC and Forterra Historic Tacoma. And so I don't know if, go ahead. Well, I was going to say it might be a little early, that's all.
Yeah, I spoke to Nick at Forterra, and he actually did not want to be nominated for Asbury House yet because of the negotiations that are still up in the air, but he did not want to go there quite yet.
So okay. I would suggest probably the same thing with the Colored Women's Club. That's probably true too. I don't want to upset the apple cart.
Sure. Fair enough.
Okay. Any more? So maybe we could have, I believe Zoe's been keeping copious notes of our discussions, maybe one final reading through, and then we can do it by acclamation with Commissioner Williams abstaining from acclimating. It's not the right verb.
He nominated Katie, not the property. So I don't think he has to abstain myself.
I'd leave it.
All right. Well, I will run us through it. So the brewery project that we just saw is going to get the rehabilitation award. Forterra is going to get leadership and preservation. Fort Nisqually, but Elizabeth, specifically Elizabeth Redrode, I really hope that I didn't mess that one up, is going to get innovation and preservation and outreach. Mike, I think it was Barlett, is going to get commercial renovation.
I think you mentioned the brewery blocks first. That is the brewery blocks one.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I apologize. Okay. So then we're changing that to
I think we
rehabilitation.
No, we can. We're just going to keep the category on that one, I think, was the end result. The commercial renovation. Yeah.
Okay.
Forterra was changed, though, to community engagement. Or it modified.
Forterra is not leadership and preservation?
No, that's Fred.
Oh, I apologize. That Fred, is.
Yeah.
God, guys. And no, I have that. Forterra is community engagement. Fort Nisqually, specifically Elizabeth, is innovation in preservation and outreach. Mike and the brewery is going to be commercial renovation. The Fort Nisqually Puget Sound Treaty Panel is getting broadening horizons. Fred Robertson is getting leadership in preservation. Pretty Gritty is getting partnerships in preservation. The SPAR is getting the Legacy Business Award. The I apologize. Is it the Wells Wells Sears? How do you what's the name on that?
Yeah, what the house on Gove Street is
okay.
Is getting
the is getting yes. And then Katie Pratt is getting the Landmarks nomination to be recognized award.
Great job. This is not an easy process to keep track of. So do all commissioners acclaim?
Yes.
I don't know how we acclaim, but does anyone not acclaim, I guess? be heard now.
Be acclaim.
Like this is a great, this is a fantastic slate. I know it's been a long meeting, so I really do appreciate everyone sticking in for this. I think these awards are really important, especially since we missed them last year. And I think this is how it works every year. I mean, we have to put our brains together and figure it out, and we get great nominations. But you know, there's a lot of brain power here too that comes up with things to add. So kudos to everyone. With that, we will move on to events, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Preservation Award Ceremony will be online May 28th, 6 p.m. Mark your calendars. Chair Bartoy will be our lead MC, as always, if he's available. And the keynote is going to be Underwater Mysteries from the Seaport Museum. And then if you haven't heard the mystery podcast, please do. It was really amazing. If you love old-time radio mysteries, complete with sound effects and 1920s slang. Just really great work there by Pretty Gritty. And then we've got some online all month virtual events here on the calendar. And and Historic Tacoma is doing a register workshop on May 25th. If Commissioner Mortensen wants to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, just that it's part of our general outreach for our McKinley project. And so we're partnering with the city to just do an orientation about what being on the Landmark Register means and all the benefits. Just, it's definitely information that's been covered before, but giving people an opportunity to check back in or learn for the first time.
And if you haven't already, have you done the Find Falcon game? That is a customized Where's Waldo game that we created.
I need to be better. I'm sorry. Thank you for the moment of shame.
Okay, I have to look that up. This is I have
the email waiting for me.
I missed that. I will look into that.
I'm the Falcon.
Yeah,
Mr. McKnight.
I was going to wait till after the events discussion was concluded.
Oh, sorry. Are we done with events?
We're done. I just pulled up the.
Oh, you did. Okay. It is awesome. I sent it to Jenny to have the kids do, and I have not gotten to it myself yet. It is in my inbox. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Oh wait, who's catering the event ceremony this time?
Your lovely home is.
Darn it. Thought we had to deal with Domino's or something. I don't know. Mr. McKnight.
This is just super mundane. I just wanted to, as the meeting closes, I was remiss to not mention that Commissioner Hilsendegger did request excusal tonight.
May it be noted that in addition to Commissioner Sundstrom, that Commissioner Hilsendegger is excused for the evening, officially. You caught it right before the adjournment, which she would have gotten a demerit. Excellent. Okay, anything else for the good of the order? From the greatest commission in Tacoma in an epic session. Thank you all for the perseverance. I'm remembering next time we could talk about if we should take a break in the middle. I apologize. I wasn't even thinking about it. So I appreciate everyone. This is really great. And good seeing y'all. And the meeting is adjourned.
Night, everyone.
Good night.